of Franza, and for all intents and purposes, whilst the meeting was an eye-opener and confirmed without any contradiction the findings of the Auditor General, the other reality was that we were faced with a dismally failing board. And in our view, and Minister, we welcome your decision to, wouldn't say reshuffle, because reshuffle would say they were placed somewhere else, to remove that board. And so, of course, the action then taken in December to place PRASA under administration is a welcome move. To the administrator, at the outset, what we want to say is that our expectation is that things must turn for the better. We were saddled with a board which was brought in to turn things around and the entity regressed. We must not have a case of deja vu where the same will happen now, where the hopes are that things will turn around and at the end of your 1 year tenure we find that things have either not moved or we are back to square one. So this introductory meeting for you and the team to take us through your plans and where things are helps us to make sure that we meet regularly to track progress and to make sure that you do not come into account at the end of the financial year or your tenure. The audit outcome was a disclaimer. The Auditor General was very clear and succinct and very blunt in his findings for the entity, and for us that is the point of departure, and of course all the other historical matters at PRASA to be sorted out. So our expectation really is that we see a PRASA that's going to be improved for the collective benefit of the majority of South Africans who rely on an effective and efficient service at PRASA for them to go about their business. I've said before, I would much rather see a situation where these endless bailouts at SAA for the elite are redirected, and I'm very cautious, I'm anti-bailouts, but in the event that they are bailouts, we'd much rather be focusing on PRASA where the majority of our people and day in and day out. So PRASA has become a key priority focus area for this committee, and we hope that we'll get things done. Colleagues, at a later stage, I think we will have to discuss ourselves further action steps that will be need to be taken on the board, the former board. That they were dismissed or dissolved or their term came to an end, however you term it, is not sufficient. And if we need to engage with the parliamentary legal services to advise us on the best possible way to hold them accountable, then we will have to do that, including but not limited to the prospects of us exploring having them declared as delinquent directors. Accountability cannot end with a dismissal. It needs to have far reaching consequences to remind you that you can't be in an entity and it collapses in your hands. And Parliament must entrench its own authority and affirm its authority in that regard. So I think we'll have to draft a resolution along those lines and consider it, but from where I'm seated, it cannot be that we accept the dismissal as the end. There needs to be consequence for that board. Because quite frankly, it was the best demonstration to date of how not to do things. So, Minister, we appreciate you've received the presentation, and we appreciate that because of Parliament's turbulent planning processes at the start, I appreciate that when we contacted you, you readily were available to come and meet with us. I am aware that there were other commitments that you had, but you yourself felt that the parliamentary process is important. So we appreciate that cooperation as well. It's very rare. some of the times we have to bring people here kicking and screaming. So what we'll do, Minister, we'll hand over to you and your team, and we will be taken through the very comprehensive 55-page slide presentation that was sent to us, and then colleagues will interact with it. So, Minister, on that note, we'll hand over to you and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the committee. Just to appreciate this to us, because the business of PRASA is very important, and we can't put our foot off the pedal. And we understood quite succinctly the challenges that we're faced with, and they require decisive action and on record time turnaround. And we've given ourselves 12 months to do the things that we needed to do. I've got a whole presentation that I can circulate to members. I want to not waste most of the time on what I need to say, which you know. My presentation entails what I will term shareholders agreement or level agreement between myself and the administrator, and then bringing you up to speed about why we arrived at the decision we arrived at, which when we appeared before this committee, we came being cautious about putting PRASA under administration. But by midnight when we left that day, we were convinced that we needed to take that decision. And we have taken the decision. It has now been implemented from last year. And I was talking to the administrator. I said the time frames were put up like 3 months, 6 months to end of the year must be implemented like we're implementing the FIFA 2010 World Cup. I'm quite happy to subject everything to SCOPA, because that is how we're going to achieve accountability. It will have its own turbulences as we inherit a broken palace where monies of the state were being spent on a bottomless pit for over the years. I can't bore you with the calculation of fruitless expenditure, which account to billions. And today I've got lines in the corridors that are not operational, which monies have been spent on something that it is said was about upgrading the system. Nothing points to that. I've got AutoPEX that is on the verge of the turnaround strategy that the administrator will speak to. I've got people who are not fully paid. I've got CAPEX projects and monies that are not being paid. And I'm inheriting liabilities, which the board did not actually address that. And since this decision, I've been a subject of attack, but nonetheless, I'm razzmatazz, so I understand this work. I've dealt with crooks before, so I understand. I respect people for what they are and the qualifications they have, but we can't prevaricate on our task in terms of taking decisions that must take this country forward. PRASA is hard hit, correctly so, like you said. Where we need to invest and turn around the situation of the working class. I've been spending time in Cape Town since yesterday and even today discussing with the Metro of Cape Town and the government of the Western Cape in the spirit of corporate governance to ensure that things are on track. Even after this meeting, we'll be meeting with the MEC. We've got my city issues, we've got issues of PRASA and all of that, and the central line that is not working. I've got more or less about 20,000 people, commuters, working class, that are unable to reach town on a daily basis because there's no train and there is no improved IPTN program, which is Integrated Public Transport Network, which is called My City, and the N2 Express, a program which has actually been stalled. And all those bottlenecks are on our radar, and we're working very hard to turn them around. But I don't want to waste time. I want to give to the administrator to exhaust his time. And if there's any questions to me, my speech will be distributed to the media and everybody else, but in the main, that is what we seek to focus on. And if there's any question from members of SCOPA to me as a minister in relation to the decisions I've taken, I will be here to answer till the end. I will then invite, via your permission, Ubongi to take you through his presentation.
Okay, no, that is fine. Thank you, Minister. Can the team introduce themselves first, so at least we know who is who? I almost said who is who in the Zoom, and I realized that may probably be a wrong terminology. But yeah, so if we can just find out who's here, and then we'll take it from here. Particularly administrator, ngoba.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, members of the committee. My name is Bongisizwe Mpondo, the administrator at PRASA.
Good morning, Chair, Minister. My name is Lawrence Vengile, special advisor to the minister.
Good morning, Chair, Minister, members. My name is Mwaku Makaipia. I'm the acting DDG Rail Transport.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lisivana Fosu. I'm the Group CFO of PRASA.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of Parliament and Minister. My name is Martha Ngoye. I'm the Group Executive of Legal Risk and Compliance.
PRASA?
No.
In the department?
Beg your pardon?
At PRASA?
At PRASA, yes.
Okay. Just before we start, the PRASA them reps, how long have you been at PRASA?
As a CFO, I've been there for 4 months.
Okay.
I've been there almost 10 years.
Okay. It's good that you are here, because then a lot of you will be a sounding board on how some of these things have happened. All right. Administrator, let's hand over to you. Welcome. It's fine. Hard copies have been distributed, so you can speak to the presentation.
Yes.
We will not wait for,
all right,
for that. Yes.
I'll
if,
do that.
If there's a challenge with anyone who needs the hard copy, like you said, please indicate our support team. We'll make sure you get Lucas. So there's a hand at the back, please, sort out that gentleman. All right, let's hit the ground running.
Okay, Street. Sure. Thank you, Chair. Just to note that the presentation that was circulated has been slightly updated, but without changing the main contents of it. So, if I may start, I've structured the presentation and my submission into...
All right, there's a hand.
Perhaps I'm struggling to grasp English. Slightly updated,
no,
without changing the...
Let's
I think you
will indicate, because see, I received a presentation yesterday and I've looked at that presentation, so he will indicate where the changes are.
Okay.
On the presentation, yeah. And if we've got an issue with that, then we'll note it and take it up with him. But it would have been better that you'd been advised prior.
Yes, so that we don't focus on something that has been changed. I think that would be better. Thank you.
Questions in a vacuum. But let's go back to look figure. Let's spend the most of money. I am cool on money. Don't you go start to spend all on money. All right. Now, Administrator, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So what I've added is a context which was not... that presentation, and it's really something I would have spoken to anyway, but just to put it in proper context. We then talked to some of the issues from the last time relating to the minutes of the board that were outstanding as per the last meeting. We'll also talk to issues of financial management that speak also to the irregularities and the findings, and then we also had a section, and we still have, on disciplinary matters and cases, and then we'll conclude. Chair, as you would have requested earlier, I do have some of my colleagues here, and just to indicate once again, the CFO, as well as the group executive legal, as well as the acting company secretary, is also with us. Mapula.
Swadala lapha kumphristo omkhulu dadwethu. Hlalela. After that slight reshuffle, let's proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So, with regards to the context and background, Chair, I'd just like to make a few points, and these are points that I've established during my time there. We faced with the reality that PRASA, which shouldn't come as a surprise, is a broken business, and this has happened over time, so effectively we've experienced a systematic erosion, you know, of value during this period, and this has taken place over a number of years. And I also want to just say, Chair and members, that this is clearly at odds with our stated intention to provide value to our commuters, who we know that do not have a choice. So, in effect, as PRASA, we are failing them. I would also like to submit that it follows that as PRASA officials, we also should not have a choice but to bring, you know, a semblance of order to this important institution while striving to deliver value to our commuters. I'll elaborate on this just, you know, a little bit later. There's a mandate, Chair and members, that the Minister has given me over the 12-month period, and I would just like to restate this because it then informs my response for the period that I'm at PRASA. So the first one relates to addressing all matters that have been raised by the AG, particularly ensuring that, or at least seeking to ensure that there are no repeat findings. So that's one matter. The second issue is around accelerating interventions that aimed at improving operational performance. So as we can see now, you know, we have a challenge in terms of our service standards. So this is the mandate that the Minister has, you know, indicated on the 9th of December when I was appointed. The third item, Chair, speaks to ensuring that we expedite implementation of our capital and modernization program, and it speaks to issues around fencing, signaling, payway, and station upgrade. Then you've also got, fourthly, security interventions, as we know that in a lot of these of our corridors and stations we are challenged in that regard. Then another issue relates to the organizational business model and reviewing that because it's currently inefficient, ensuring that we're able to manage our capital program. So a lot of our projects don't move with pace, so that's number six. And then number seven, ensuring that we recover the system, or at least to ensure that we put interventions to recover the system through ensuring that we've got proper services from service providers and so forth through panels and that make things much easier. Then we've also got issues around Transnet on the eighth issue that we need to engage with Transnet on.
Okay. That's the amendment, right? That's the addition. So, which he's giving the context and he's going to, from there he moves to the presentation. That's what I was saying, that the administrator, that's a soft copy you are reading, right? All right. Can you email that to the members? Members have got their gadgets here, so they can immediately in the group email, Mrs. Dombe. Yeah. So if you can just email it to Mrs. Ngabinde. Ngabinde@parliament.gov.za, and then she can just circulate it immediately. just particularly those amended parts in the at parliament.gov.za. Okay, colleagues, so please just watch your gadgets and it should come in any moment now. And then you can follow what he's saying. Yeah, I'm going to imagine the straight at the what you might call. We're about to move to the presentation now after that context, right? When you finish with that, you're dealing with the substantive matters as they appear. Yeah, and then when I get in the street to young Catalyst, I'm going to go to the hospital. No. Go through it. What time do you have been go 60 kilometers? There's no sitting today. So it can come through, but it will be circulated, right? There's no crisis. Alright, Sis Dombi, it's been sent. Our members just go through your gadgets shortly. Alright, let's focus on the issues, colleagues. Administrator, you can continue.
Alright, so still with the issues and with Transnet that we need to deal with, there are a lot of issues that create challenges between us and them that have not been resolved over time, so we need to engage on those. And then lastly, but also quite important, Chair and members, the issues around consequence management and also ensuring that we support investigations that are currently underway by law enforcement authorities. So these issues are the nine issues that have made it into my mandate as given by the minister. So I thought it important to give that context. And also just to, since it's my first sitting, to give a sense of, what one has done since they've arrived, and then deal with the issues. So if I may, Chair, I assume my task on the 9th of December, and just to also alert the committee that one has been fully engaged on this since then without taking a break, as it were. Concluded my SLA with the minister, which he made mention to earlier on in December. And during this period, I've made some observations and developed a turnaround plan for my period in office, and I would like just to put that also. And this included, during that period, just doing a quick assessment, meeting with key members of staff, and visiting and seeing the operations around the country, particularly during the month of December. Okay, so I've also met with organized labor during the month of January, Satau, Untu, and Nomsa. I've also met with commuter forums, stakeholder forums around the central line here in Cape Town, and we're having further engagements as well as Mapupane. And these are priority corridors that need to be recovered, and I thought that's important to highlight. And we'll be going back to these communities in this week and the next week for more detailed engagements around those recovery plans. We'll also engage further with other corridor forums in the next week. Also engaging staff around the turnaround because it's important to get it down to that level. And also in terms of what we'll be reporting on, I think it's important to also note that I've met with the following key heads of these institutions, DPCI, which is the Hawks, SSA, SIU, and the Auditor General, as we go about our business. Just to also remind the Chair that I'm almost 2 months into this job. 2 months will fall on the 9th of February. Just quickly, Chair, I think it's important to preface this and all what we'll say around some of the observations I've made during the period. When I talk about a broken business, it is what I mean. It is. So there's actually very little, if any, order in the business. And a lot of the changes in the boards which they're also emanating or leading to the interim board for the better part of 2018-19 have been problem, so that's around leadership and management as a challenge. Countless changes at CEO level, and in my assessment, this has been by design a key enabler for instability, which is what we're facing now. So in other words, what has happened is that PRASA becomes a fertile ground for non-performers and wrongdoers. I think it's important to highlight still at that level, Chair, because these things all have an impact in terms of the issues that we'll be discussing, that some questionable decisions have also been taken, at leadership level that have had disastrous consequences for PRASA. An example is security contracts that were cancelled without a contingency plan, and that has led to a lot of the damage that we see on our infrastructure as well as our rolling stock. That continues on a daily basis. So that has created problems at least. We've also had very little or no consequence management, suspensions are not resolved speedily. On the systems and control failures, there's very little or no proper keeping of records. We struggled to find, you know, a lot of documents, and I think the last session you had here was a case in point. I'll talk to this matter later when I talk to, some of the disciplinary cases where you've got instances or files that we actually need to use to exercise discipline have gone missing, you know, at Prasa, very important files for that matter. There's no adequate backup systems, operating systems are manual, and an example there would be Autopex, for instance, where the scheduling of buses is on a manual basis as we speak, and I've visited these depots to ascertain that. Policies and standard operating procedures are either not there or outdated. We also have challenges with regards to SCM processes, and therefore we're not able to get to the point where we need to, with regards to ensuring that we get the proper services, and we're also able to implement, you know, our infrastructure. Then the issues of irregular expenditure we'll talk to, but as we know, very high, over 20 billion over the last 4 years, around 3.9 in one year. Big challenges, and we're seized with those, and I'll talk to it again. So a number of cases are being investigated by the Hawks, and this is what we presented, as well as the Zondo Commission. We also had the SIU secondment team that has been working there in 2019, and they're back there working with us, and we'll give an update. With regards to the service level, we've got challenges there because our network is open, so it's not secure, and as a result, we therefore do not secure our revenue. So there's fare evasion and all sorts of ills that go with it. Our security response is also not adequate, so we expose our assets, to vulnerability and therefore, you know, vandalism. So we talked to the issue of rising fare evasion, threat to safety of passengers, and not only passengers but also our staff.
Full narrative of something we have not heard. And I'm advised that, Mr. Eater, can you use your rally voice into the mic so that you are audible to everyone? Sister Tombi, how far are we with that? Has it arrived? Because those are very substantive changes now that you have presented. Issues, as I'm listening to you, they are very important and key. But as I'm saying, may I crave the indulgence of colleagues, please, that we allow the fourth industrial revolution to assist us in real time. So you will receive it, and it's now on the screen. So if there's a matter, we can go back to these slides. Okay, Administrator, you can continue.
Okay, Chair. Thank you. With regards to my observations, once again, which is what this is on rolling stock and infrastructure status, we're losing, you know, train sets daily due to a number of reasons related to poor planning from our side. We have issues around components in our depots that are not fully readily available. The GO program, which is popularly known as the general overhaul, has been delayed, and the coaches that are due for overhaul. Parked coaches are vandalized due to inadequate security. When it comes to mainline passenger services, social laws are made. We're extremely, our locals are extremely unreliable. Our infrastructure is in a very poor state due to encroachment, inadequate maintenance, and vandalism. Then with regards to rolling stock and infrastructure status, we've got poor implementation and spend rate on the capital program. So as of November, for instance, 2019, there's 10% of our capital budget had been spent. Okay, the number of reasons related to that, Chair, with regards to SCM processes, we lack adequate technical capacity, fragmentation of functions and responsibilities, lack of effective program management, as well as external factors such as crime. So in terms of the program and what one is looking to do in the next year, just quickly, that there is just some executive realignment, and these are just issues to give, you know, background once again. Chair, the war room was meant to complete its work on 31 December, which it did. Of my view is that it was able to bring a lot of energy into the business. We've then, you know, began to transition it into the functions of the institution, absorbing the corporate functions into EXCO, restructuring of the EPMO under the Office of the Administrator, that, and that will include strategy. So those functions have been integrated into the business. And then I've set up five committees of EXCO: revenue enhancement and cost containment, governance, service recovery, safety management, as well as capital and modernization program acceleration. So I've streamlined the activities of EXCO to respond to the minister's mandate as such. And that's just more around this. We're also looking at consolidating the capital program function, which is fragmented, strengthening communication and interactions with our stakeholders, which I feel has been fairly absent. Moving to effect permanent appointments at senior levels. There are quite a lot of vacancies at PRASA. And then strengthening the office of the administrator through a combination of skills that I've listed in under six areas. And then this just to give a sense, Chair, of how we're integrating the ministerial priorities with the subcommittees. So there's five subcommittees, and we've then integrated those areas. So there's a responsibility from these subcommittees to look into those areas, and that then will make sure that we achieve what we want to achieve in the next 12 months. So and lastly, on this context, the way that we've structured the 12 months is that we have a three-month delivery period, 6 months, and then 12 months. So over the 3 months, that takes us to March. We're looking at bringing stability and order into the business, and there are a few initiatives that we have under that. And then over the 6 months, we're looking at execution and, you know, accelerating execution in terms of the activities and the interventions that we need to put in place. And then over the 12 months leading to December, towards the end of my tenure, we then would be looking at commissioning projects, ensuring that there's business continuity, and then handing over. So we've highlighted these projects, and I'll just talk very briefly to each of them. So under the stability and order, there's a number of interventions.
Peter, you see, the slides you are going to now appear in the original presentation. So can you now reference us to that? Because you have moved them around. So I would prefer that let's go there, because the two previous slides now were in the original.
Yes.
So can we rather now go to the original one? Otherwise, then we might as well put this one aside, if this is now going to be the alpha and omega of the discussion. I'm saying the last three slides that he has spoken to now are in the original presentation.
I think it was in the last slide.
Exactly, that's my issue. Which you said, like Brina and Manja of the original presentation. It makes following very difficult. It makes it very, very difficult. So, Ella, Mr. Sibuyelela, because the matters you are now speaking to are here. And if we can please go that to that original presentation, and we will start at board minutes. The issues you raise now will appear. We'll start with the original presentation, and we'll start at board minutes. So that will be slide 1, 2, 3, slide 5. Because this appears. So at least now you know that I read your presentation. So we'll go to the original presentation, slide 5. We'll start with the board minutes, and then we'll move on.
Are we not disrupting his thought process, Chair? I'm skeptical.
He has disturbed our thought process.
Yeah.
The issues he's raising
are in the original.
Yes, I understand. I'm saying he has amended now. If both audiences are going to be disrupted, it's not going to take us anywhere.
Let's not be technical.
No, I was saying, let us allow him to continue, Chair.
But we continue in the absence of a presentation. All we have is a screen. He said he made slight changes. What he's doing now is not slight changes.
Now, hence I raised that earlier, and we have taken a posture to continue. So I'm appealing that let us continue and allow him to take us through the presentation and not interrupt him and his thought process. That is my humble plea to you.
No. The danger with that is that you set into motion a precedent where we accept our changes as a norm.
But that's what I've raised earlier, Chair.
Now I'm making a decision. I'm making a ruling now. The flexibility which I had exercised has found itself to be wanting because the changes are not slight changes. Okay, Beg, it's okay. Nobody's going to die. The administrator will go to the original presentation and we're going to go to the issue of board minutes, which in fact was one of the thorny issues in November. So let's go there, and at the end, if there's a need for the administrator to conclude, he will make a conclusion on the basis of his amendment. You see? Because nambenga mazukutlo slight amendments unani sengiyambona manje ukuthi kubi, right? So let's go back to that one and we'll start with board minutes, right? Can you please continue?
Okay. Chair, with regards to the board minutes, so we've gone and gone back into those minutes, compiled them for the years 2018-19 as well as the current year. What we've established is that towards the end of last year, the board had attempted to rectify or at least pass those minutes, but that has not happened fully. So we've got a compilation of these minutes which have not, you know, been signed. Those that were able to be recaptured. So the tables that we present here are all the minutes of, you know, the subcommittees as well as the board that would have been presented at the time for ratification and signing. And we indicate in terms of the columns the meeting that took place as well as when that meeting took place, whether they were approved or not approved, date approved by the committee if they were, and also, you know, the last review by board of committee or committee and the approval or reasons thereof. So those tables speak to that, Chair, noting that I think even in my role as administrator, I would not be able to, you know, to sign those off because I didn't sit, you know, in those minutes, even though I occupy the accounting authority role. So it's a table, Chair, that gives us a laundry list, if you like, and largely, as you can see, most of the board minutes have not been approved, which makes it difficult because then they do not have, you know, a standing or status in the company. So that's what we sought to do through, you know, the compilation, you know, of the committee gatherings or meetings as well as the board. And some of them were not also presented at the time. So the situation with regards to non-adherence to governance, as far as that is concerned, still remains. All we've done is to give you the details that link to that. So that takes you to all the way up until page 8 on the slides, Chair and members. So if I move on to page 9, update on Auditor General audit findings for 2018 and prior years. So the audit outcome for the last 3 years we know. And what we have here in terms of the summary is that the nature of findings that we indicate relate to three areas primarily, impacting on the auditor's opinion, which is Annexure A, other important matters, which is Annexure B, as well as administrative matters, which is Annexure C. And as you can see, we've presented three financial years, 16-17, 17-18, and 18-19. And what we find there is that there has been an increase, understandably, of these findings, which would also would have led to the disclaimer opinion. from a total of 204 to 275 in the year 18-19. So, but also to note that there are quite a lot of repeat findings in the AG's report. So, in terms of addressing these findings, so since November last year, that's when the process would have started, and it has escalated to date. So we've set ourselves targets as follows. So for the 18-19 Annexure A, so what we needed to do was to document our action plans and close the findings. That's what we still need to do because we're working on that. So we've completed the work. So we've got work streams that have been looking into this. The report has been validated, and various business units have confirmed, because ultimately the various departments within PRASA have to look after their own findings. So this has been documented and is being handled through work streams and filtered through, you know, to the various units as well as EXCO. And then with regards to annexures B and C's, so B and C for 18-19 action plans, there have been documented. Well, they should be documented, and all findings should be closed. This is work in progress, Chair. We've started because we had already started working on A, Annexure A, so now we're working on B and C, which started at the beginning of last month. Okay, so process to address findings that started again last year, and this now speaks to the prior years, being 17-18 as well as 16-17. We had started with the latest, which was 18-19, and now in early Jan, we started with 17-18 and 16-17. So work is in progress with regards to ensuring that the report is being validated, and we then are confirming and sending through to the various business units to deal with the findings that have been identified, you know, in the areas. And we keep track of these, you know, at EXCO level as well through the governance subcommittee. Okay, so if I can move on, Chair, to page 11, issues around financial management at PRASA as at, 31 December. So if we look at quarter three performance, just to give some highlights, so if we move towards the last, three columns, with regards to revenue, so we've got their budget, this budget towards the end of the financial year, Chair. In terms of revenue, the budget there we had was 2.8 billion. We're forecasting revenue of 1.4. So you can see that there's a depression there, or downward pressure in terms of our revenue. The subsidy budget was at 6.2 billion, but the forecast is at 7.9. So effectively the subsidy is 27% above target, which then takes us to, you know, total income, you know, just over 2%. Our expenditure, we budgeted 12.2 billion. We're forecasting 10.9, which is slightly lower than budget. So, but it doesn't paint a good picture, Chair and members, because our total cost coverage, if you look in terms of our forecast, there is at 75%, which is lower than what it should be. So cost covered by generated revenue, also very low at 13%, so we're not generating nearly enough revenue as we should. And then total uncovered cost at 25%, and cost uncovered, you know, by generated revenue, we're looking at 87%. So if I turn over to the next one, Chair, so this is stating pretty much the obvious that PRASA is experiencing revenue leakages, and you can see it in the numbers with regards to the revenue that we should be generating. Higher expenditure than revenue with cost coverage of 76%, including subsidy, and 18% excluding the subsidy that we derive from the Department of Transport from Treasury through the Department of Transport. So the uncovered cost, or the cost that we're not able to cover, that they result in cumulative short-term debt, you know, which makes it a bit problematic, you know, for our operations. Okay, so just on here, this slide on page 12, which is slide number 24, it effectively demonstrates to us that our personal costs, you know, are relatively high. If we can see, you know, based on, you know, the percentage. So employee cost, for instance, the budget that we have, which is the second last column, For 2019-20 is about 5.7 billion. And then you've got other costs there, overtime, you know, energy, maintenance, security, as well as municipal costs. So 47% roughly would then be, you know, our variance with regards to the actual that we had planned for this year. But proportionately very high, and that's an issue that, of course, we're going to pay, you know, attention to. All right, so in terms of cash availability, if we move on to slide or page 13, versus commitments at current run rate. So we generate an average income of roughly 687 million per PRASA per month. Our average monthly expenses are 908, which is a consistent picture with the financials we reflected on earlier, that our expenses are higher than, you know, our revenue. Accounts receivables at this stage, we're looking at, for quarter three, that is, we're looking at 310 million. And this is a figure that should, well, that troubles us quite a lot. So our account payables, creditors, that is at 3.6 billion, which is quite substantial. Okay, so as indicated, well, in the earlier context, we have looked at and set up these committees that are meant to ensure that we are focusing on all the key issues that we've identified as important and also responding to the minister's mandate, and I'm not going to repeat them. But with regard to financial management in particular, Chair and members, we have a revenue enhancement and cost containment committee that is meant to look at ways in which we raise our revenue. Of course, finance doesn't do that, but, you know, the targets are set there and the monitoring would have to happen at that level. Then the cost containment issue is also very important for us, because whilst we're looking at plugging leaking revenue, we also want to, at the same time, to ensure that we keep a very close watch on our costs. And I think there are a number of issues that are troublesome that one would have picked up. And I'll just mention one example, for instance, that at PRASA we don't have a contracts management unit, so therefore it's difficult to also ascertain the value that you get, you know, for what you are purchasing. And that's what we're working on, we're setting up with immediate effect. Okay, so we then have a situation where we constantly, in terms of plugging that gap, have to request a conversion of cash from CAPEX to OPEX in order to ensure that, you know, we're running on a daily basis to meet our expenses. Okay, so rationalization of expenditure, especially fixed operating costs, is an issue that is important that we're working on. Okay, so if I may, Chair, then move to the disciplinary cases. There's a number of issues there that we'll talk to around consequence management and where we are with regards to that, and I'd like to update the committee. Let me then use that opportunity to move to page 15 and talk to the status of consequence management. So there are a lot of findings, mostly to, you know, similar employees. So you might have a couple of cases, but they would be repetitive in some cases. But these would relate to different procurement events, which means different, you know, tenders, so to speak. So we've had a challenge also with regards to this, because the legal panel that we've had at PRASA was last, well, it was, it came into being in 2011 and would have been therefore possibly a three-year period, which means that around 2014 or so it would have expired, and that also is what has led to a lot of the irregular, you know, expenditure, so to speak, and this applies to a whole lot of other procurement events. So to help us with these, we have now, we are looking to participate in the legal panel for Nexa that will assist us in terms of expediting these disciplinary measures that we need to put in place. But I'll also just talk to what we're doing, so we're not only waiting for that. So we've engaged the SIU with regards to this, where there are matters that we can actually implement disciplinary on. And the one issue there that we talked to is the fact that with the files that we have, that we're able to find, based on the work that was done, investigation files, we are already compiling disciplinary measures on those. Those that we're not able to find within PRASA premises, and we've traced them through a forensic
investigation, internal forensic, that they are sitting with a certain law firm, and you know, we don't know how they got there. So through the SIU, we've then issued a request for information to retrieve those files, and that we did last week, and that five-day deadline ended yesterday. The files have still not come through. They've now issued a subpoena, or at least they will be issuing a subpoena today that will last for 14 days in order for us to be able to get those files back. However, with those that we could find that have annexures, the annexures are important because they give us the information that we are able to use to generate the charge sheets. That then speaks to slide number 30, still on page 15. So the following files are the ones that have annexures, where our HCM team as well as SIU are working on, you know, in terms of drafting, you know, the charges. So we've listed, and this is how the files are named, by the way, so it's not a matter of just mentioning the names of the companies. And we're working on these, Chair, and within the work, with the turnaround time that I have for us to be able to move forward is the 14th, you know, of February on these that we could get information on. Okay, so just the next slide then speaks to, you know, the employees that are implicated in the investigative matters where we are now preparing charges. So you've got in the table on slide 31, the number of employees implicated are 60. Those that, well, one has been suspended, five have been dismissed as of now. So this is what would have happened also previously. It's not the actions that I have taken at this stage. And then those that have resigned or their contracts came to an end are 17. So we have 37 employees within the employ of PRASA on the basis of, you know, the aforesaid list of investigations that we need to undertake. And then the matters that were indicated at SCOPA in the previous visit here last year, only three matters of those have investigative reports with annexures, and we indicate the names of those companies. And the rest of those files are the ones that rest with the company, the legal firm that we are trying to retrieve them from. And as I indicated, a subpoena will now be issued to them so that we can retrieve those files. It's quite an anomaly, Chair and members, but this is what, you know, we kind of find there. It makes it a bit difficult for us to work. But nonetheless, we're not sitting on our laurels. We're doing all the best we can to ensure that we get them. But those that, I think the underlying point here is that where we've got files that have the investigation files with the annexures, we're moving ahead with those. Okay. So the rest, or at least these slides that follow from page 17, just give a sense of the files that we are working on and what the status is, number of employees that are implicated, those that are suspended, dismissed, resigned, or active, and the timeline within which we, you know, I'm expecting that we're able to then have a set of charges that relate to the employees that are implicated here. So there are two remedies. We need to ensure that internally disciplinary action is taken, but together with the SIU, since we're working with them, where there are issues of criminality or corruption in particular, you know, we'll then be seeking to utilize a special tribunal that has been set up, SIU tribunal, to ensure that charges are laid. And also the other remedy that we seek is to recover the funds that would have been siphoned out of the organization. So that's the idea with regards to these. So in due course, we'll be making, you know, the relevant announcements. So these tables then speak to all those cases, and they just give the stats broken down now in terms of each of the cases that we're working on. Okay, so then the other issues, Chair and members, relate to matters investigated by the Hawks. So we met with the Hawks, and there's quite a number of matters. There's about 21 of them that they're looking at. So the tables that follow effectively outline all those. So just to say that these cases, all of them, Chair and members, have not gone to court yet. There are investigations that are being finalized. They're all at different stages. of progress. There are investigations that are being finalized around each one, you know, of these. And as soon as they are ready, then the Hawks with the NPA will then be able to lay, at least to go to court. So we're following up, we're working with them at the Hawks, providing them with the information that they need for us to be able to make progress on these cases. So, Chair, I'm not going to go through them in individual detail, but they are outlined there. And the highlights in terms of the yellow are the, you know, the companies, you know, or the beneficiaries from, you know, from these transactions. So I'm moving ahead, Chair, to then slide or page 22. Matters reported at SCOPA in 2019. As indicated, with those, there are three matters where we could find the files, or the files were in our possession at PRASA. So in this indicator, the yellow file, the yellow one, marked as yellow, if you've got color combination. But in any case, the ones that would have 14 Feb 2020 as the deadline are the ones that you know, the SIU is preparing charges on. We're doing it jointly, but you know, they're leading us on this, which has proved to be very useful. And then the ones that we've got as 31 March in terms of timeline to issue charges are the ones where we're still trying to retrieve, you know, the files, you know, from the said law firm, hoping that the measures that the SIU puts in place, because in the if we're not able to get a response within 14 days, as the SIU informs us, then it becomes a criminal offence, you know, and they should be able to then follow up on that matter. So we'll count at least 14 days from now for us to be able to follow up on those. So those tables, Chair and members, then speak to the status of those disciplinary matters. And then if I can move to the internal disciplinary cases and grievances, that's on page 25. There's quite a number of those. What we're seeking, and that's the reason we put these here, is that a lot of them have been on the in the system, you know, for quite a while, and ours is to try and deal with these as speedily as possible, because a number of these employees, some of those that are suspended, in you know, actually, you know, earning and not being able to, we're not able to derive value from them. So we've, you know, indicated very, you know, according to the various divisions in the entity. And what we just want to highlight is that quite a number of them relate to PRASA Rail, you know, in the, if you look at that row, and it's a lot of grievances in particular, and we indicated there that it related to protection services, and it's an issue that we are attending to quite a bit. So there's quite a lot centered around issues here in the Western Cape, and would like to deal with these, given an instruction that, you know, 90 days would be too long, so we need to deal with them quickly. But also in some cases, Chair, we've established that some of these suspensions would have happened in a very informal manner, where someone gets suspended, you know, in a passage, you know, without a formal process. So those that we know have not followed process, we then need to be able to, you know, to assess them, and if it means that withdrawing those so that we can derive value from these colleagues, let's do so that it's not just a matter of doing, well, exercising discipline without following due process. So, Chair, as I move forward then, I think these issues on page 26 I touched on in my contextual background earlier on, and also talking to the areas of focus and priorities within the next 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. And if we move on to the last slide, there are a number of interventions there that we talked to. So with the various committees, so this SANRAE just gives us a snippet, and I'll talk to those, Chair. If we take safety management, or at least let's look at the first 3 months. So with regard to safety management in the systems or interventions, we're looking at issues such as ensuring that our depots, you know, are clean, you know, depots, you know, it might sound like just vegetation, but actually it makes a big difference when it comes to security, because the criminals are able to evade through such. We're looking at ensuring that we've got drone deployment, because there's so much that you can do with physical capacity. So there's a process around, you know, ensuring that we procure these services for security reasons. CCTV deployment, were critical, because in some areas we actually do not have such, especially in our depots, which matter a lot for us. Supply of armored vehicles, and this particularly applies to our lines in the Western Cape, as well as ensuring that you know, security is invested with technology. Filling of critical vacancies also within the security space is important in the next 3 months. With regards to service recovery, critical components, delivery is important. So when some of our trains, Chair, are not able to be serviceable, it would be because we do not have, you know, the components and parts to ensure that we are able to bring back our trains to service. So we're working on that, ensuring that our stores, you know, are appropriately stocked, and we have the parts to get our trains back on the lines. Window replacement, we've got an anomaly in our yellow and grey trains, in that because they've got some aluminium embedded in them, they've been the source of attack quite a lot. So if you look at a lot of our trains at the moment, you might find that they don't have windows, because the vandals are after the aluminium around, you know, that. Yeah, train scheduling tool that needs to be enhanced, and uniform clothing. You know, our in some instances you'll find that our protection services don't have uniform, which, you know, they're not identifiable effectively. So we're looking at that. I mean, short-term things we need to do that would be able to make you know, a big difference. This is just a snippet of these interventions. With regard to revenue enhancement and cost containment, this is short-term. We're looking at reducing overtime costs, which seem to run away with us. So we are monitoring that, putting interventions in place. There are duplications in the organization. This speaks to the operational model. So you've got a lot of duplication that you see at corporate as well as at divisions, which would mean, therefore, you have people that are doing the same thing. It's a problem. Eskom tariffs are also a bit of a challenge for us, and we're looking at renegotiating with Eskom around this. Some of these issues are issues that we should have had in a long time. Our policy environment is not up to date. So we mentioned here, for instance, a disposal policy. PRASA does not have a disposal policy, so if you go to our depots, you'll actually find a lot of scrap lying around based on the parts that you know, are not usable anymore. Creates a problem for us, because in some instances, if you take, let's say, a depot like Bramfontein, the vandals are attracted by the scrap, and whilst they're in there, they then access, you know, coaches and vandalize our coaches. So that creates a problem for us. So we are approving, or at least we're looking to approve this policy, and then implementing it. You know, the approval is the easier part. Biometric systems installation to ensure that we're able to get or keep track of our workforce in terms of how they, you know, attend to work. Our capitalization framework as well is an issue that we're looking at that speaks to ensuring that we're able to spend our budget appropriately, particularly on the CAPEX side. And then on governments, reviewing all SCM policies. We've had a problem and a challenge with regards to SCM. Our policy has been outdated, but also created some, you know, inhibited us from being able to ensure that we are able to procure timeously. So we are busy reviewing this one, Chair and members. I mentioned earlier the issue around Transnet. Since the transfer, or at least the exit of PRASA from Transnet, there are a lot of agreements that were meant to have been settled, and some of those relate to properties. You know, for instance, for Autopex, the Harmony Depot in Johannesburg is a Transnet-owned property that we are operating on. So those are the issues that we need to finalize with them in the short term. Yeah, we need to approve key policies. I mentioned those, particularly in HCM, you know, and finance. Then in terms of acceleration of the capital program, here we're looking at, you know, fencing our stations and fencing our network. Depot modernization program has been delayed quite a bit, and this has had an impact in terms of our new trains as well, getting them onto the tracks, because we need to be able to receive and store them. So that program has been delayed, and we're going to expedite the implementation thereof, because the designs are there. What we need to do is to ensure that we get contractors on site, you know, to get on with the work, and we'll be able to then have, you know, modernized depots as well as stations and substation refurbishment. So I think the point around the capital program, Chair, is that we've had these projects in place or in the pipeline, but they've just not been able to move. So ours is then to really accelerate them through the committees that we've set in place. And then over the medium term, which in my term is 6 months, on the safety side, we're looking at ensuring that we modernize our control rooms. We have we upgrade our stations, we reduce manual authorizations in a number of areas. On service recovery, we would like to conclude the ad hoc tender that relates to components, and then also conclude the locomotives for the MLPS. I think we possibly are all aware that there was a bit of a problem previously with the locomotives that were to be purchased, and those were primarily to serve what is known as social order mail. So currently we're struggling in that area. We have about 123 odd locals, possibly about 20 of those are in service, which is a problem. So we need to look at ensuring that we do get new locals for the MLPS service, because it has actually, you know, suffered quite a bit. Supply of rails for our pairway infrastructure is important. And then with regards to revenue enhancement, the cashless ticketing system, you know, with buses currently, you also do have manual sales, and you've got cash offices in the depots. We want to, you know, change that. On the more system side, we have a system called SEP, which is, you know, could be used for quite a number of things. And in actual fact, I think we find that a lot of our findings relate to lack of systems and controls. And, you know, our ability to activate the necessary SEP modules would go a long way towards assisting us with regards to ensuring that we firm up on our controls, as our control environment is very, very weak. Okay, so automatic fare collection and then performance management needs to be in place, both from a punitive point as well as a point of view where we need to be rewarding good performance. Okay, on the governance side, interface agreement with Transnet, we're looking at in the next 6 months that we must have concluded that. Municipal tariff for properties, rail reserve invasion, we need to deal with. Then also on the acceleration capital program, the resignaling programs that we had started, we would like to complete, particularly KZN, because we had made quite a lot of progress in the Gauteng area in Western Cape, except for the central line. Then drainage upgrade. In KZN, for instance, we do find instances, particularly during the rainy season, that our lines get clogged up or muddied up, and we're not able to use them due to settlements, you know, along the, you know, our lines. So that becomes a problem, and it's an issue that we'll look at working on in the medium term. Okay, then this is more internal about the consolidating of the enterprise program management function and project management capacity. Important for us, Chair, because it's key that we are able to get good information, at least, you know, at EXCO level and at my level, good quality information that will be able to assist us to take decisions and ensure that we are driving our programs with the necessary speed. And then in the longer term, which is the 12-month period, around safety, we need to ensure that we've got where in the priority areas over at bridges, you know, the fencing program is very important, because we need to secure our stations, we need to secure our network, and in that way, besides just it being a safe safety intervention, it also ensures that we secure, you know, our revenue, more importantly, as you'd have seen in the figures that we presented, that, you know, there's huge downward pressure on our fare revenue. And then service recovery, we need to finalize the general overall tender. At any point in time, you would have 8 to 10% of your fleet, which needs to go on general overhaul. We've missed a cycle, and this normally happens after 9 years of your coaches, at least life cycle. So we've missed a cycle, so that percentage keeps creeping up. We possibly would be anything between 15 and 20% of our total fleet that needs to go for general overhaul because we've missed that cycle. So we need to finalize that, Chair. It also has an impact, I would imagine, because it's not only about it impacting on our service, that is components NGO, by the way, but it also impacts on the industry that services us, and we need to look at it both ways. So we have a lose-lose situation where we're not getting the service due to us not moving on these matters, but I think the industry also suffers because we're not procuring the necessary services. And then on the revenue enhancement cost containment over the long term, we're looking at implementing a shared services model. So currently we've got divisions, well, it's a hybrid. We've got divisions and subsidiaries, and we're moving towards a system where all our units become divisions, the delivery units, being, you know, Prasa Tech, Prasa Rail, CRES, and Autopex. And in doing so, we will be implementing a shared services model, which means your services such as finance, SCM, you know, legal, supply chain would then be centralized, and we then are able to work much better that way. Currently, you have them decentralized in all sorts of divisions, and it creates, you know, untold confusion in the organization. Employee recognition and rewards program. So it's not just about us being punitive. We need to bring recognition as well, because you do have employees that, you know, are quite dedicated and who are skilled in their craft, and we need to be able to reward them. The registration of Autopex and Intersight as subsidiaries as we move towards this divisionalization model of operation. We're looking to do that within the next 12 months. What we said is we would like to do it sooner, Chair, but we have to also submit a business case, you know, along these lines to the Department of Transport as well as Treasury whilst we undertake this process. And then on the acceleration of capital program, Autopex and mainline passenger service recapitalization, very important. We've not been able to, as the shareholder of Autopex, we've not capitalized Autopex over the period. I think the last major capital intervention would have been the buses that came from the 2010 program, but our depots have not been modernized or upgraded over the period, and we need to look at that. Mainline passenger services, I did make mention of the fact that we do have a problem with our locals, and we're working on a solution with the Department of Transport around seeing what we can do with regards to this exercise in terms of replenishing. It's a longer-term process, but we hope we can have some quick wins, and we're working with the DOT, as I indicated. And then ensuring that our ICT projects are all in place, and then delegations of authority for the regions. So the streamlining we will do is to ensure that whilst we have the divisions in place, but we couple and consolidate functions that should be in one area. You know, currently you've got a capital program at Prasa that sits, all over the entity. We need to consolidate that at Prasa Tech, for instance. Our security and protection officers report to Prasa Rail, not the chief of security. So we need to consolidate that so you have a proper security force. So, Chair, that's my submission and on behalf of Prasa in terms of giving an update of where we are. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Administrator, thank you. If there's anything you then want to conclude with, which we may have been covered in the amendments you had, you can do that. Otherwise, I will hand over to the colleagues. There's 101 sets of minutes in the presentation which you allude to. That is of serious concern because it calls into serious question how those are now adopted, and yet again it speaks to the incompetence of the interim board that was dissolved. I say that when
combat that, because, I mean, they're no longer there. The people who are supposed to adopt these minutes. So it is of serious concern, really. But I think when we conclude, we'll factor that into the roadmap. Right, colleagues, Mr. Administrator, are you good? Are you fine? Okay. Right. Let me start at the front and go that way. So today we're moving this way. So we'll start with Liz, and then move this way. You were second yesterday, so you'll be last today. Right? We'll move in that sequence. We'll start at the front and then move in this way. All right. Honorable Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Minister, and nice to meet the Administrator. It's a big job. But having said that, World Cup 2010, from an infrastructure point of view, had its many problems, but it certainly was almost on time, or just very much on time. But I think a better example is the Chinese hospital of 1,000 beds that was built in 8 days a week ago. I think the crisis in France is more in line with coronavirus than it is with the Soccer World Cup. I think the importance you're putting on it is good, but I think it's a crisis. It's not a set of games. People's lives are disrupted to the point of real crisis. So I really would urge that you've gone through the last page, Mr. Administrator Bongi, in some detail, but. And you've only been there 2 months, but I re-emphasize that the Chinese built a hospital, 1,000 beds in 8 days. We need to see a detailed program of how you're going to do these things in 3, 6, 12 months. I mean, you've given us a general picture, which is important. You've got to have your big picture. But now is the timeline and the resources you need. And that's where, Mr. Chairman, I think is going to be a massive crisis, because the country doesn't have much in the way of resources. We're borrowing heavily. And so the question to you is have you done any analysis of the existing resources in the organization and what additional you will require? Because without those resources, it's easy to say the Chinese do it in 8 days, but they have the resources, and there's no question that people, money, skills is just poured in. Are we able to do that, in your opinion? Perhaps the administrator, but Mr. Minister, you as well, perhaps can share with us. Now, I know it may sound kind of petty, but it kind of is illustrative of the crisis. I understand that you're using second-hand brake pads on locos. Is that true, or is that just one of these fake news things? Because it goes to my question about resources. If we have to resort to second-hand brake pads. And Mr. Chairman, just on a much, much lighter note, that if you're going to resort to bringing back into service some steam locos, I'm a qualified stoker on steam locos, and maybe I can get a job.
Well, now Mazamba nomsebenzi le Parliament, ngavimbela ma internetu. All right, let us take 3 sets of hands, and then because this is not a hearing like we did yesterday. So Honorable Fanmin, we're moving in a sequence. This is not a two-call. Right? So what Administrator will do, you'll take 3 sets of hands, and then after that you can respond, and then Minister, if you want to comment on the things, and then we'll move in that sequence. All right, Honorable Fanmin.
Thank you very much. Talking about the Soccer World Cup, I think, is a good starting point, because, you know, we've gone in Cape Town from about 80 train sets down to, 31, 33. So that's a loss of about 50 train sets, certainly since then. If one estimates a train set costing about 8 to 9 million, we're looking at 400 million rand just lost in terms of rolling stock in Cape Town. When you start combining that with what's happening in KwaZulu-Natal, what's happening in Gauteng with destruction of rolling stock, how many arrests have there been? Hearing that in Cape Town there was only one, and that was of a minor. If there haven't been any arrests, what is being done about that? Is there an internal investigation into what is happening with security? Because you can't have this kind of destruction happening at Cape Town Central Station without somebody knowing something. So the question really is there an internal investigation into the failure of security at the railways, and what is being done with PROLASA to actually deal with that? Because we're talking about very, very serious money that impacts working classes very, very directly. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Honorable Dirk.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just allow me to make a general remark before I come to the two issues, the three issues that I want to raise here. The administrator speaking about the vandalism of our new trains, where they break the windows out to take the aluminium. Now, that speaks directly to the moral degeneration of the South African society. And that is a serious, serious problem that we are facing in society, which we, at some stage or the other, as politicians, we need to address this problem that we are facing in society. Because it's not just breaking the train, the windows of the trains for aluminium. In South Africa, if there's a truck that capsizes on the road, whether it carries foodstuff, beers, whatever, you'll find it. South African society will stop their vehicles and they'll jump out and they'll go and call, steal those things, go and collect it. Instead of helping the people that are injured in that vehicle, they'll go and they'll go loot these vehicles that have capsized. And that's a serious societal problem. I made this example once. I said, look, I don't like the Americans really. I don't like their policies and I will never go to America. But there's one thing we can learn from the Americans, is their patriotism. There's no South Africans are so unpatriotic. It seems like when they get up in the morning, when South Africans get up in the morning, they think, what wrong can I do today? Urinate on the street, throw papers on the street, throw fast food packets out of the vehicle.
No. You see, you will not degenerate. Everybody will have an opportunity to speak, and there is merit to the issue of the moral decay in the country. And us seated here as public accounts must remind the public constantly and continuously that any vandalism that takes place is a cost to the taxpayer. So the points that Honorable Dex is raising are fundamental and at the heart of sustainability. It's equal to the nonsense taking place at UKZN where they're burning buildings, even the HIV and AIDS unit. Because what happens when you've destroyed, we have to fix that by paying. The resources are not endless. So what Honorable Dex is saying is very much relevant to what is needs to be discussed. We're speaking about rands and cents and people here. The operative word in SCOPA is the P, public. So, yeah, yes, not to pee in public. Yes. So, Honorable Dex, I implore you to drive that point home. This is about instilling a culture of South Africans owning services, goods, and just the assets of the state as their own. Otherwise, we'll be back here again lamenting Uguti trains have been burnt. Who's burning the trains? It's people out there. So, Honorable Dex, you have got our full backing in driving that.
Thank you, Chair. I'll wrap that up now. Thank you, Chair. I think maybe it's time for South Africans that we must become more patriotic, and perhaps it should start with us politicians. Our whole behavior, the way we conduct ourselves in society, the way we conduct ourselves in departments that we are running, the way we conduct ourselves even in the house, we need to start setting an example to start the moral regeneration of society. Because if we don't get that right, we'll continue facing these problems, and SCOPA will continue sitting here trying to address these problems. That's a problem that we are facing as South Africans, and we must perhaps start with, as I raised it once, I said, we as part of SCOPA, it's easy for us to sit here and say why that one's not vetted, that's in procurement at ESCOM, that one's not vetted, this one's not. I said, perhaps the time has come that SCOPA must, people that serve on SCOPA themselves must get vetted. Because many members of parliament even runs away from vetting. They don't want to be vetted. And perhaps if we want to bring society right, in future all members of parliament must be vetted. And you'll see how many will make it into parliament if they get vetted. Some will not even make themselves available to come to parliament because they will run away from the vetting process. But we must get the society right. But that's just a general point. Coming back to the issue, let me start with the issue of the security. Now, I believe it's highly irresponsible, financially irresponsible, that you can cancel security contracts. You cancel security contracts and you don't put up, you have no backup plan in place. And this is exactly what has happened in Brazza. If you look at Park Station in Johannesburg, if you see that beautiful station, how it's been vandalized, if you look throughout the country, how our properties have been vandalized, costing us billions of rands, simply because we have cancelled security contracts, whether they're regular or irregular, has been cancelled. These contractors took us to court. Many of them have won their cases in court. I want to know from the administrator, how are you going to deal with the issue about the security companies that we cancelled the contracts for, that went to court, they've won their cases? How are we going to deal with it? How are you going to deal with it, that matter, and deal with the issue of security at our station, the Fuller Mem in front of me have raised that the strength has been burned in Cape Town. How are you going to deal with that issue, that security issue? That's the first one. The second one, Mr. Chair, we can't just, I heard what you say, the board is gone regarding the minutes. It was shocking in November when the board comes in, these people had no minutes. They could not show us minutes, could not pursue us minutes. Maybe they went back and they went and fabricated minutes after they went back. Because they send you a letter that, if same evening they send you a letter to tell you what a disciplined board they are, you know, and all that, that note that they sent to you. Now, they come there with no minutes. Now the board is gone. The minutes have done a very good thing. But we were very angry that evening. We were tired and angry, wanted to go home, and we told the minister, fire this board here, deal with this board, or else we'll deal with you, minister, we said that night there. Well, the minister done the right thing, he got rid of this board. Well, this board was very incompetent. But we can't say that, no, they're gone, because it's a serious problem as ministers, because there's no way we can adopt those minutes. Yeah. Because we were not there, you were not the administrator when those matters were discussed. But we have the company secretary here. The company secretary should really speak to those minutes, because the company secretary's responsibility is to bring minutes, when the minutes of the meeting, to bring it back to the board, for the board to look at the minutes, to adopt it. So we have the company secretary here. So we want to hear from the company secretary. Why those things have not happened? Because the administrator raised in there, he said the problem was not only with the board, the problem was internally to in Brazza. So we have the company secretary, so the company secretary must shed light on the issue of the minutes. Why she did not bring the minutes to the board, why the minutes was not adopted. So we want that from the company secretary. And then there was one last issue that I want to raise. Oh, the last issue is that I see with the security companies and all some other companies that there's investigations on, I see that charges, investigations have been brought against employees and charges against employees of Brazza. But I see there's no charges brought against the companies that was been involved in this all. That, because we always say the private sector is very, very dangerous. They do wrong things, they corrupt officials, and then they get away, and then you find officials get into trouble at the end of the day. So I want to know, is there any action that you will take against these companies that have been found that they've been doing colluding with officials? Because I only see you dealing with officials, not with these companies. And then lastly, your cost to employees is too high. The 50% is really, really too high, administrator. You have to bring it down to below 37%. It's extremely high, 50%. We can't stay there. Thank you very much.
All right. We want to take three sets of hands. So what we'll do is we'll respond to those three, and then we'll take the second set so that no question gets lost. The company secretary, how long have you been at the entity?
I started with PRAS in August.
August
2019.
Okay. All right. The issue of the minutes, people will maybe think we're being petty. It was an audit outcome. It's what in large part resulted in the disclaimer. There is no record of decisions.
there is no record of resolutions, but somehow people continued working. The only thing which was available was the register, so people could get paid. And that on its own should tell you the extent of the I don't care attitude which characterized the outlook of the board. Like I'm saying, it's 101 sets of minutes we're dealing with here. That's a lot of minutes because it includes the subcommittees as well. And so, colleagues, really, there is merit to us instituting a process about those individuals. And we'll draft that resolution and we can debate it as a committee so that Parliament really entrenches its authority, amongst other things, and to hold people accountable even when they have left. I do not contemplate a situation of any of those individuals being directors anywhere if they can't even keep it, minutes. So as far as I'm concerned, we will really have to engage with parliamentary legal services and the entity on the basis of the information they are providing, because as the administrator was speaking, he was really peeling the onion, the layers and layers of the problems that are there. So I would really, colleagues, implore you for us to apply our minds very seriously towards court action instituted by us on behalf of Parliament, of course, with the resolution of Parliament to have those individuals declared as delinquent directors, so that there is no repeat of this and Parliament ensures that being dismissed from a board is not your redemption, which then continue to go somewhere else. So I think in consultation with legal, we'll draft that resolution so we can present it to the House. Because also, Minister, one must say the issue you raised the last time in our meeting in November is important. The manner in which the boards are appointed, there needs to be a far more rigorous and more transparent process. You see, lento kukhonjwa ngenjele, bese kuthiwa ngene body. No. There must be a process, a transparent. So I think we're moving in the right direction. Let's hand over to the team to respond to the three sets of issues that have been raised. And then Honourable Paulson, Honourable Sow, and Honourable Hattaby will then come in again. And then if there are any follow-ups, members can come back. Right, Administrator?
Thank you, Chair. I'll take the questions, and I think the Company Sec and the CFO will deal with some of the issues, Company Sec, on the issue of the board minutes, and the CFO, Chair, on the issue that relates to the employee costs. I think correct, Chair, the issue around, the resources in the organization. It's a mammoth task to rebuild, PRASA on a number of fronts. So we are taking this on as a project, hence we've been able to stratify it, in a period of 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. And that was the beginning, of it. That then with key milestones. So the themes that I talk about, and then, overall the key milestones. So at the end of 3 months, we must have a semblance of order, we must have stability and order in the organization. In 6 months, we must be able to execute speedily on our projects, and then we must in 12 months commission and build business sustainability. So the question is whether I've done analysis of resources in the organization and what will be required. Yes, I have. Not comprehensive in terms of the entire organization, because it wouldn't be possible in such a short space of time. And I've targeted and identified the key skills required for delivery, particularly on the technical side. So I've, through HCM, engaged a number of the key technical skills that I've then identified to reassign, particularly around engineering and project management, which is one of our key areas. So in the short term, so I'll give an example. When it comes to the central line and Mabopane, which we've started working on now, we've developed an integrated program around it,
which has three facets to it, which is still under development. So there's the infrastructure development, which is infrastructure recovery, that speaks to the payways, overhead traction equipment, as well as the fencing. Then we've got a security stream around it that then speaks to ensuring that we've got proper security, as well as also the technology that goes with it. And then the third stream is the service recovery, you know, what we'll have, you know, in 8 months, but also we're looking at options around an interim solution, you know, between then. And those conversations are happening, you know, with the various spheres of carbon that could come in and support us. So in that project, to give an example, because those two are priority projects, because we need to bring the service back. So I've identified two individuals, engineers within the team, who are going to be dedicated to managing those two projects and building a team around them. Because once you have got quite a lot of these colleagues, but some of them are not fully utilized within the organization, and some we've identified those. So identify these two colleagues are going to be driving those projects with a team built around them. There will be areas where we might need external, you know, assistance, and in that case we will look, you know, externally and also talk to industry bodies, you know, like the EXAs, you know, to assist us in terms of getting, you know, skills. But in terms of getting the projects going, I've assessed the capability that's inside. Whilst it's not fully, you know, it cannot cover us fully, but I'm happy with what we can do in terms of starting and getting the program going. The team that I've also established in my office has also got the some of these requisite skills from a finance point of view, supply chain, legal, operations, technical and engineering, which will also, actually they've already begun working with these teams and assisting. So we're in project mode effectively in terms of how we looking at this task. And then just briefly, so that's in the immediate term. But what we also are doing is developing an operating model, because the current operating model is not suitable. And that also identifies issues around alignment, but also the skills within the business. And the way we are doing that operating model is that, again, we've identified colleagues that are properly qualified and skilled within the business. We've looked at their CVs, and we've built what I call an internal consulting team, which in 2 to 3 months will have developed an operating model, a new operating model for PRASA, because they're the best people that should do that. In actual fact, you've had a lot of consultants come in and undertake a lot of work at PRASA. So the first port of call is for them to analyze all that work, synthesize it, and come up with options. So that will also give us a sense in a much more scientific manner, you know, in terms of the skills that we require. And that team will be managed through a project steering committee on a weekly basis, and I'll be running with that. Then second-hand brake pads, I cannot confirm this. I've been to all our depots. So throughout the period of December, I visited all our depots, Bramfontein, I've been to Walmerton, Teguini, as well as here in Cape Town, and you know, this has not been brought to my attention, you know, at all, because I took a tour with the various depot managers and the engineers in the various areas. So I cannot confirm this, Chair. What I can confirm is that yes, we do. We still have a bit of work to do, but we wouldn't cut corners and do illegal things. Otherwise, that will lead to you know, findings as well as incidents, you know, on our network. Okay, and then in terms of arrests, currently with the fires that were in Cape Town, there were two young members of society that were arrested and were still in custody. The challenge there, Chair, just to give a sense, is that they were undergoing interrogation. And we're beginning to divulge information. And, you know, during that process, a private lawyer then stepped in to represent them, which meant that they couldn't talk further. And we don't know, you know, who that lawyer is representing. So, but a lot of the other cases, we're working with SAPS on them, as well as crime intelligence. So these processes, you know, do take a while. There are some pointers, but, you know, at this stage, one would not want to, you know, start casting aspersions, but clearly it's a consolidated and, you know, there are clear elements of sabotage, because it continues, you know, from province to province, you know, and the latest we have established also that some of these incidents were beginning to pick up in KZN. So we are moving with that. So there are cases that are registered, and we're working with them very closely. In some instances, we've also appointed our own private investigators to assist. And I think where we've issued rewards, for instance, with the case in the Western Cape, there were results in the sense that those two were arrested. We've done the same in Joburg with the Bramfontein depot fire burning. We've issued also a reward, and hopefully, you know, that can also yield results. Internal investigations into the fail of security. A couple of days ago, I did summon all the security senior managers, into PRASA as well as those that are in the regions, to actually discuss this matter because it is of serious concern. And I think you correctly put it that we are bestowed, or at least we have the authority over these national assets, and it's incumbent upon us to protect them. So one wanted to really establish what we could be doing differently, how we deploy differently. Yes, we are stretched, Chair, with regards to the security. We don't meet the minimum global standards of say one security per six commuters, so to speak. But so we've got 2,400 in our employ as PRASA, and then the security contracts that we refer to have about, they give us about 3,400 security personnel. So we've looked into that, but there are some in cases, and this is possibly the more disturbing part, the external acts of vandalism, external, but we do have in instances, and this is what the team has informed me, and I still have to get the information in detail, where there are internal members within security, not only security, but within the business, that have been arrested, well, disciplined, and some have been fired for having been part of, theft of one thing or the other. It could be parts in the depots, or at least maybe it could be collusion with the vandals. So there are disciplinary matters that have been undertaken in all provinces. Particularly, Eastern Cape is not that that affected, but KZN, there are some disciplinary, and including managers for that matter, as well as Gauteng, and Western Cape. But that's possibly the tip of the iceberg. But at least, there's some movement, and would like to make, more progress with regards to that. So, moving on to the issue of the security and how we're going to deal with the matter of security. So, as the honourable member put it, yes, the security contracts, as we know, were all cancelled. There was no backup plan. So we were then instructed, at least the court would have indicated that we needed to give them 1 month's notice termination, even though they were originally irregular. And that had been going on for a while. And I must say also, Chair, that based on assessment, those contracts were also badly structured and not to the benefit of the organization. And it speaks to the earlier point that I made, that the absence of a contracts management unit, it actually makes it difficult to get value from what you're procuring using state resources. So those, we then gave them a month's notice, which was the month of Jan. But parallel to that, Treasury had given us gave us a deviation to allow us to utilize the panels that ESCOM uses as well as AXA. ESCOM, because they also face similar problems with regards to cable theft, and we thought they would be able to utilize, would be able to utilize same. So that was granted, and the process of evaluation based on those panels, Chair, is almost should be finalized. So that is the measure that will come into place as soon as those contracts lapse in the next in the next month or so. Okay, so charges. I did indicate that the charges are, this disciplinary measure is dual. So with regards to employees, we have to undertake disciplinary action, but where there are acts of criminal or fraudulent activities that have been identified through the work we're doing with the SIU. So that's why I listed the companies there, Chair, you'd have noticed in that, that those companies would then also be liable to criminal conduct, as well as us trying to recoup, the monies that would have been, with them having unduly benefited. So it's both ways. There would be recourse, against the companies. I'll then hand over, Chair, to the CFO to speak to the issue of the employee cost, which is high and rightfully identified, and then the company sector to speak to the minutes. Thank you.
CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. And the Honourable Member, you are quite correct in terms of the high personnel cost. Hence, in the presentation from the administrator, he raised that as one of the highest cost drivers we have in the business. And we have also done an analysis ourselves to really try to understand what is driving this high cost. Some of the findings we have done, we found that there's a lot of non-performance in Brasa, but instead of managing performance through either exit or improvement plan, additional person will be hired and that one will be moved somewhere else. And some of the other areas we've identified is that we will have full staff establishment, whereas some of the services are outsourced. Now, how are we dealing with the situation going forward? I'm very happy to hear a member of parliament saying that we need to reduce it to 30%, because when you start talking about reduction of employment, we know what we are talking about. So, but on a serious note, the administrator spoke about the operating model that we are looking at. That operating model, we hope that it will identify duplicates, and from those duplicates, it will be another way of us saying that these are the areas where we need to cut costs, we need to redeploy people, etc. Another area that we are looking at is in terms of filling vacant positions. Instead of going externally to look at employing people, the first point of departure for us is to look internally. But obviously, capability as opposed to capacity plays a major role in terms of really rebuilding this broken organization that has been spoken about. The other measure we are using as a short term is our budget process for the MTF 2021, where we are actually looking at identifying those excess capacities and then start engaging with various people. There are various measures that we are brainstorming on, such as voluntary early package for people that are closer to reaching retirement, but those are still under discussion. But we are aware of it, and it's something that is our fingers are at the pulse of that matter.
Okay. That's right. Company Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of minutes, Chair, we only started doing the minutes from 2018 when the board was appointed. When I started, a majority of the minutes had not been compiled when I had started. That's why you see on the raw data that we put in the presentation, we do say when it had gone to the board since I had been with the organization, which is after September 2019. So what we've done is, as we compile the minutes, we compile the resolution register because it's non-existent at the moment, and that we are going to table to the administrator to decide on how we take forward those resolutions.
Maybe the question becomes, why were the minutes not being done as a standard operating procedure, like as a norm? I mean, let me put it this way, at the end of this meeting today, I will receive the draft minutes of this meeting today. So what was happening? I think you need to help us understand, because the disclaimer, the regression, arises through this. And it's indicative of poor document management and records management generally in the entity. So yes, you are compiling, suppose you're using records and things, but why was it not being done? I mean, I would imagine you, as your point of call, you'd want to investigate that so that it doesn't happen again. If it was part of the culture of the institution, my mother, who was a nurse, used to say prevention is better than cure. So you'd want preventative measures. So have you investigated the set of circumstances which induced this irregularity and non-compliance and dismal performance?
on the part of the board and the management. So I think that is the nub of the issue to correct the situation and do the minutes. That's fine, I suppose. But the fundamental question is why, because here in this committee, we ask what killed the patient. We're doing an autopsy, so we need to understand that duty, so it doesn't happen again. Right? I think Honorable Debs wants to.
Yeah, Chair, just maybe I should rephrase the same question that I asked earlier. The company secretary was there from August, September, October, November. Then the board came and met with us. She was there for 4 months when the board met with us. When the board came there, they had no minutes. Perhaps she can explain to us, in the 4 months that she was there, did she not give the board minutes after their meetings? Well, they had many meetings, so they're claiming board fees and many meetings in 4 months, according to that list. Now, when you came there in August, did you not give them minutes? Well, they came with no minutes, they had no minutes. So what happened from this August there? When they meet, they didn't even worry to ask you for minutes or what was happening there for those 4 months.
I think if you start looking from the schedule of the minutes, you see that some are presented, but completed but not presented. Yeah, so this would cover your tenure. If you start looking at from item on the schedule number 81, that's when you began. So some were presented, and then number 89, completed, not presented. 90, completed, not presented, and then that trend continued.
Yeah,
so let's sift the egg, the yolk from the egg white.
Yeah. Chair, we're asking the question not to blame or point fingers. We were trying to understand the culture that was there. What was actually happening there?
She may have to assume a particular level of responsibility for the 4 months that was there. Until she unpacks that they were complete but not presented, is to understand why they're not presented. Right, on the minutes? All right, let's give Honorable Hadda with an H. Margaret, he's on minutes.
It's just the question that the Administrator Bongi did a good job of explaining human resources. I'm particularly concerned about financial resources and whether that analysis has been done, because without the money it's not going to happen. So that was
okay.
My question.
Right, Honorable Hadebe, just on the minutes and then we'll go back to the sequence.
No, thanks, Chair. I think there's something strange with these minutes, that all board meeting minutes were not approved except special meetings. If you look into special board meetings, all of them were approved. Then it begs the question, why were special board meetings approved?
Yeah.
And others were not, including key and critical committees, your audit and risk.
Exactly.
Performance, and there's other committee, I'm not sure, but it starts with an F, I think it's finance, FCIP. All those committees, the minutes were not approved. Then who took a decision to cancel this tender if all these minutes were not approved? Where were you getting a mandate to act if there is nothing whatsoever that speaks to the approval of the minutes?
Yeah.
If we can get a clarity on that aspect, Jim.
Yeah. So, Company Secretary, you can just speak to issues that related to you insofar as this is concerned. This is to help us just really separate the yolk from the egg white. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
When I started in August, we started doing minutes from 2018. The first opportunity, because the minutes were approved at quarterly meetings, was October. And if you look at a lot of the October meeting, a lot of the minutes were presented there, although they were not approved. So if you look at the actual agendas of the meetings, you'll see that we've got meetings from 2019, which was my first opportunity to present
all the backlogs that we had done by then. That talks to what I'd done when I started and what minutes were being done. So we did the minutes from August, September. The first opportunity to present was at the board of October to table. But during that time, we had emails to the sets that were ready for them to review as and when the sets were ready. But the formal sitting to approve the meetings, the first opportunity was the October 2019 meeting.
Yeah, but you do realize that the 2018-19 audit outcome, the AG is explicit. That's the issue. So what you're doing then in part is responding to the AG more than your own systems, because this was at this was March 2019 when the financial year ended. So yeah, but we'll come back to that. Let Honorable Somi 1 minute. Alright, here's what we'll do. Just throw all your questions in the lot, and then we'll come to Honorable Paulson and then Honorable Hatem, so you don't have to come back to us. So you can do two streams.
No, thanks, Chair. Well, you're giving me that, so let me just try to deal with this. Thanks to the administrator for the briefing generally, which looks into the outlook of PRASA currently, which might be indicative even to the minister, that the appointment of the administrator is for a certain period, and the hold, which is a sinkhole thrown into, would have to struggle again to get out of the sinkhole, and in doing so, a number of steps ought to be undertaken. One of the steps which he indicates on is the question that relates to restructure the CAPEX against the operation budget or finances, probably to improve liquidity or whatever that is entailed in terms of the financial capability. But then, in the nature of things, when you have so far we're outlining that you've gone to this place, to that place, to that place, and so forth. The nature of wisdom of doing so, you know, in packaging your financial capability, where would that take you to? Because tomorrow you might get back and say, because I've undertaken to rob Peter to assist Paul, this problem arises out there. How are you then going to get into your own categories of envelopes to ensure that your structure of finances does not necessarily take you away of the route which you would want to achieve at the end of it all? So that's the area where I'm a bit concerned, worried, because you don't then suggest how are you going to get back into the trail in terms of the capital expenditure, you see, after you've done such adjustments. The second area is the area that relates to the recoveries, maintenance, and the repairs of the infrastructure. The locomotives and so forth, in as far as to improve your sustainability. Now, I live. I'm from Alice. There's no train there. Go train. I grew up knowing the train. And then the biggest center for me is Eastlander. There has been an area where trains, repairs, coaches, locomotives are repaired. But that center is closed. It might be as of October, November. it's no longer operating. So the recoveries out there are somewhat stalled, even the repairs you see in the center. Then the outlook of capability in terms of the movement is itself somewhat affected in the area. How do you seek to deal with that? Maybe it is part of your plan. I'm citing something which was before your time, maybe now as enhanced within your own time. How are you going to deal with such areas? There's an interesting part for me that there's been an executive for risk, legal and risk, for 10 years in that institution. And then you still allocate matters of governance there. Well, correctly, one might nail the company secretary and say, where are the minutes? What has been happening? You see, she is saying to us, I gave the board all the outstanding minutes, and the board failed to authenticate, to deal with those kinds of minutes. But the company, continued business as usual, and the risk areas in terms of the operation of the company, it looks like there have been less or nothing which sought to signal such areas of risk, and even now when you allocate such a task in terms of areas of governance. The same individual is in charge of such areas. You see, where do you want to go? Where do you want to take this company to? And if that is the case, are you going to really, really achieve what you want to achieve? Confidently? Are you going where you want to go? I rest my case. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Paulson.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Administrator, for your presentation. I'm sorry, Mr. Ministers, but I'd just like to, Minister, you have a war room which was supposed to respond, and there's been some improvement, or maybe you managed to stem some of the damage that was unfolding at PRASA. And you said, in August, you said you would improve on-time performance from 50.2% to 85%. You'll increase the number of train sets from 157 to 291. And just now, the head of the war room said that you're on track to have 191 train sets by the end of March, and was supposed to be 291 by the end of December. And also restrictions or train lines, amount of train line with speed restrictions will be reduced from 167 to 100 kilometers. So if you could give us an update also on how that is going, because that would give us an idea as to how responsive we are to the serious challenges of commuters out there. And then also, in terms of the amount of people employed and also the amount of work that has been outsourced, and you know, it's we want to make an example, or we want to speak about model regeneration, but I think, you know, if we really want to make an example or set an example, start sending corrupt politicians and officials to jail. That would scare people from stealing windows out of the trains. I think that's the best way to deter damage to any public property, is to, when we punish officials and politicians for the things that they do that are wrong. So I'd like to know, in terms of the work that's being outsourced, and I think outsourcing is just an opportunity for really, to put it mildly, wasting taxpayers' money when there are skills within BRASA, within the rail agency, that could actually do the work. And I mean, and I do understand that a lot of the work we speak about signalling and the coordination of trains, and that's you know, highly technical. If we can get it right, we can run an efficient service. I mean, in December I was in Madrid. There are 10 railway routes running underground, and every 2 minutes there's a train, and it runs on time. They've never been late, not even by seconds. So it's, a lot of people use it. It reduces the strain on the roads there. So imagine what we could do, Minister, if we have an effective rail system, how much, you know, we reduce traffic on our roads and accidents that happen there. So, you know, you've got the most important, portfolio here in terms of a developmental country in delivering an effective transport, bulk transport system. But it's only going to come right if we do the right things and build proper skills within PRASA, that Metro Rail can run the trains on time. So what is the plan in terms of building those skills, that will have effective systems, will have people to run those systems without being reliant on some outsourced company that is going to milk us dry for every cent that we've got because we're now building a dependency on them? We need to build this capacity within PRASA. So what is the plan there in building proper capacity within PRASA to run an effective bulk rail system that can really add to the development of this country? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Honourable Hadebe, to you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. See, the advantage or disadvantage of speaking late is that most of the issues have been captured.
Not late, lost. Lost, yes, okay.
I'd like to thank Honorable Razmataz for your presentation. Indeed, we welcome your bold and decisive action that you took. It clearly indicates thus far that you are able to walk the talk. Because, Chair, it became evident and very clear in our last engagement when we interacted with the then board that they were really found wanting. In fact, they were swimming in the river of confusion. As we continued to probe and ask pertinent questions, to us it became clear that we were like fishing in a shower. Hence, we opted to stop the meeting. So we welcome your bold decision. We support your decision 100%. But I want to state this, Chair, that Cape Town is the most congested city in South Africa. You have Central Line not functioning, which caters for the poor, Khayelitsha to town. You also have MyCity N2 Express not functioning. Now that creates a serious strain in terms of congestion in the city. So I'm appealing to the administrator to treat this matter as an emergency and a matter that ought to be resolved as soon as yesterday, because we cannot continue as business as usual given the current issues that are taking place. But I'm also concerned with the intergovernmental relations with all these three spheres of government. And my Honorable Alderman Van Minen will attest to this. We are from the city of Cape Town, both of us. When you talk about security, we have previously launched the rail unit enforcement together. Comrade Blade was the then minister, with national, provincial, and the city of Cape Town. We paraded almost hundreds and hundreds of law enforcement units fully equipped. So when you're complaining about issues of security, I would like to get an understanding. What happened to that rail enforcement unity? City of Cape Town also launched what we call a public transport enforcement unit. My colleague will be able to explain better. That enforcement deals with issues of security in all the public interchange network. Are you not having good relations with other spheres of government when it comes to issues of security? If not, how then do you improve on such? Because I'm raising this issue, it speaks to the rents and sets when it comes to your infrastructure that gets destroyed on a daily basis. If you have these assets at your disposal, why not utilizing such? So if I can get an understanding, because we welcome your timeline, and I would like to propose, Chair, that our engagement and future meetings should be based on the timeline as presented to us by the administrator. Your milestone projection of end of March, we call you back end of March, whether or not you have been able to achieve your stability that you promised to achieve. End of June, we call you back again to give us a sense and an update whether or not you've been able to achieve your second milestone projection before your tenure comes to an end. Within 12 months, you come back. So that will be my proposal, Chair, so that at least we measure according to what we have presented to us today. But the last issue that I also want to touch on, Chair, is this issue of the minutes. And people might wonder, why are we so
excited,
concerned about these minutes? It speaks to good corporate governance.
Okay.
The platform where decisions are taken and decisions are reviewed and monitored. Now, if you have 103 meetings without minutes being approved, one wonders who gave the executive an authority to act when the very same board could not agree or sign off that these minutes are the true reflection of what we discussed. Procurement processes, who approved this procurement huge contract if the minutes are not the true reflection of what was discussed previously? Who took a decision to go to court and challenge the security tender if the minutes were not approved? So the reason why we are so concerned about these minutes, it does not give us an indication of accountability that decisions that you acted upon them are backed by the signed minutes. So it becomes critically important for us to understand who gave them authority to act when there is nothing in black and white. You are professional. You all know that an appropriate delegation of authority is in black and white. So if the minutes are not approved, were you acting on what? On instruction over the phone, approve this tender, appoint, challenge this security contract in court. There is nothing that supports you as professionals. You are also found wanting that you acted without appropriate delegation of authority. So that's the only focus and the concern when it comes to a minute. It speaks to good corporate governance, Chair. So I think it's one area that the administrator needs to look into, which speaks to what you have proposed, that perhaps the then board will need to do something. It can't be a coincidence that only special meetings are approved. And I suspect that those special meetings, perhaps it had to do with tenders that ought to have been approved then, and they convene an urgent meeting. And it can't be Nicodemusly that now those ones are approved and signed, because someone must eat. But when it comes to disciplinary measures, issues of implementing the AG findings, minutes and records are nowhere to be found. And lastly, we were told that the problem was the lady.
Yes.
Yes, we were told that you had a problem. Or the previous one.
it was the staff.
The staff, yes.
The problem was with the staff.
Yes. So you had a problem. You altered the minutes at some point. You write your own
thing.
Or not her, the previous one.
The staff.
Oh, okay. So I would like to get a sense and an understanding whether they were crucifying the wrong Jesus or they're shifting the goalpost in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
All right. We will hand over to the team. Let me just ask these few questions and then you can write up, round up. I do not know where you get a metaphor, Zako. If it's not swimming in the shower, it's swimming in confusion to crucifying the wrong Jesus. I think you must open a school. If you speak about instructions, it must not be lost on us that instructions could very well have been given in a manner which is inconsistent with professionalism. If you look at the fact that the Emirates SAA code share deals was canned via a WhatsApp message in terms of the revelations before the courts. So that must not be lost on us. On that slide, Administrator, a perspective on financial performance in terms of quarter three. Your average income per month is 687. Your average expenses is 908 million. So the difference there, if my maths is correct, is 221 million. That raises concerns. Your accounts receivables, 310 million. Your account payables, 3.6 billion. If my maths is correct, the difference is 3.3 billion. And why I raise this is SAA at some point was generating about 31 billion rands when their expenses was 33 billion rands. That set into motion, in part, the collapse that we witnessed today. So the question becomes, is process solvent? Do we have money in the bank? What's the state of health in that regard so far? If you just look at these numbers, because your expenses surpass your income just on the perspective of third quarter by 221 million, right? And that is definitely a concerning picture. I'm sure the minister will attest that in 2014 there was a cabinet resolution for the vetting of all those in the supply chain management sectors in government and entities. Has that happened at PRASA? So we would want to know what's the status insofar as the vetting of those persons are concerned. The CFO makes reference to consultants. Is the cost of consultants included in the 47%, or that's a separate cost center? And of course, then what's the cost of these consultants? And who are these consultants, and what are they consulting for? And importantly, the issues around the skills and knowledge transfer at the end of each contract. Because if one of the things that has been said here was, if I'm not mistaken, is the absence of a contract management unit, if I heard correctly. So what is the status of those contracts with those consultants? Are they there until the good Lord comes back, so that we can actually tie it down and clean up that particular aspect as well? When we make reference to the efficiency of 2010 World Cup, at some point I was praising the efficiency of the country so far as that is concerned, until we went to Medupi and Busile. And then we were told that Medupi and Busile was set into motion to make sure that we had sufficient electricity for the 2010 World Cup. Two things happened. 2008, there was load shedding. The problem started. Second one is the revelation that Medupi and Musile was supposed to have been planned over 3 years, but they were planned over 1 year. And that is why still in 2020 we are still settled with design corrections. So I applaud the outlook of agency, but agency must be balanced with proper planning and effective and efficient implementation to ensure that the corrective action steps that are being taken do not down the road land us into another problem. I think that is that's important. So what we'll do, Administrator, you can respond to all the issues that have been raised, and then I will make some few proposals. There are some there, then we'll hand over to the Minister, and then we'll conclude. So, Administrator, all right. There's a small Anyana skeleton there. Honorable Hadebe.
I almost forgot this question. I'm not too sure, because I don't see numbers, but the status of consequence management at PRASA, which speaks to the legal panel that could assist with implementation of consequence management, expired in 2011. Because there was an issue that, okay, an allegation that PRASA is using the irregular law firm currently. Can you elaborate on that? How true are those allegations? And which legal panel are you referring to? Are you referring to the very same panel that has been questioned in terms of them operating illegally or irregular in terms of the findings? I'm not sure. Are you on the same page, the status of consequence management at PRASA? Yes, the third paragraph that speaks about the legal panel that could, yeah. Okay, I'd like to get clarity on that
clarity
aspect.
Clarity on the circumstances surrounding the legal panel.
Thank you.
And on consequence management, you will recall, because at the last meeting there was a great deal of confusion from the board and the then acting CEO. When we asked a simple question about people who had been suspended, those who are with law enforcement agencies, everybody had a different number. So it's good now that there's a basis upon which we can reference to in terms of the cases. And the numbers seem far much higher than what was presented the last time. All right, Administrator, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to start with the question that was raised going back to the resources, financial resources now. So from an operating budget point of view, I think it's the numbers that you've been interrogating, Chair. There we have a problem. Earlier on in my submission, I had indicated, so we also have a CAPEX budget, so the CAPEX subsidy, so to speak. And this is the one that I was referring to that has not been adequately spent. So the numbers there from this year's budget, as of November 2019, 10% of the 12 billion rand CAPEX budget had been spent on projects. So as we sit towards end of December, the CAPEX budget would be sitting at about 20.8 billion, for this the financial year we're in, as well as the carryover, from the previous year. So when it comes to financial resources for CAPEX related projects, the money is there; it's just not been utilised. It's the operations where we struggle, and of course there is a symbiotic relationship here. If we're not spending on our CAPEX project, it means that we're not doing the things that we need to do, and therefore we're not able to get, our trains running and our infrastructure fixed. So, and that's the capital program acceleration that we're then talking about, because it means we can then secure our stations, secure our revenue, ensure that our network is in a good state for us to be able to transport our commuters. Um, Chair, there were some... So I'll handle the questions that I'll need to handle, and then I'll point to the colleagues. I think the issue around CAPEX and OPEX, so you think the Honourable Member would have been referring to the conversion that we're talking to, and that's really a stopgap measure to plug the gap. Rightfully, you've identified the right problem, and that's what it is. You know, we don't make enough revenue to cover our costs, and now and again we have to undertake this conversion, which has been happening. What I've requested finance to do in this regard, and I would not have, you know, the answers to that now, is to develop what I call a, you know, an equilibrium funding structure. So that equilibrium funding structure for me would then say, at its optimal level, where everything is happening, we're servicing the demand from our commuters that we need to service, what is our funding structure and what should it look like? So we've got four revenue bearing streams. So we've got rail fare revenue from our trains, we've got bus fare revenue from Autopex, we then have leases in terms of the stations and the tenants that we have, and then the operating subsidy, you know, which we also categorize and classify, you know, as revenue. So the idea is to then see when, you know, what would that be? So what is our optimal fare revenue at, you know, peak, you know, demand, you know, across the network, as well as, you know, the other elements. Then we begin to look at, and that's the work the CFO is working on. Then we begin to look at our optimal expenses. What should they be for them to be able to generate that requisite revenue? That will throw us out to a point in future, which will not be within the 12 months. It will take, you know, a bit of time. But, you know, I wouldn't want to, you know, to throw numbers up until the work is done. So in terms of where it will take us to, then it will then suggest at some point, you know, we reach an equilibrium level. If it therefore means, even in at its full functioning state, you might still need a little bit of a subsidy, given that it's, you know, public transport, then, you know, we can look at that at that point in time. And, you know, this work, I think, will have to dovetail with a lot of work that Treasury also does. But from our side, we will have, you know, a sense and be able to present also to the Department of Transport fairly soon. With regards to recoveries, maintenance, and repair of infrastructure, so you mentioned, you know, an example around East London. So with East London, we utilize Transnet facilities, which are in East London for some of our train and coach refurbishment work. But we also do, we haven't closed, you know, the East London station, we do repairs there as well. So we've got a team that does repairs. The problem is not only just about East London, as indicated, it's across, you know, the country, where we've not been able to activate and ensure that our supply chain management systems and processes work in our favor. And therefore, even if you go to East London, you will find, which I was there in December, our stores are not adequately, you know, stocked, you know, and that's what we have now begun unlocking. And I think, you know, in the last week going forward, we should see a difference in terms of, you know, adequate parts within our stores, because we've cleared, you know, that confusion. So there should be progress there. It doesn't. So it talks to two things. It talks to the infrastructure that we have, you know, our power infrastructure, our OHTE, ensuring that we, you know, we've got a rail network that is in good condition. But it also talks to the refurbishment of our coaches. On a daily basis, what we refer to as ad hoc maintenance from our side. Okay, and then, I think on some of the issues around risk, Martha, you'll need to respond to that from a legal point of view. But I've noted the point that you've raised, that, you know, you walk into an organization, you will find people that are working in all sorts of areas. So I've spent time doing my assessment, but also, this, you know, looking at where some of the strengths and weaknesses are. And that I have made some initial changes, particularly in the acting positions in December in the divisions, you know, which are considered critical. And that then will also apply, you know, to some of the, you know, other key areas within the organization. There is an opportunity also for employing, you know, permanent people, because at EXCO level we have about 6 vacancies, and the divisions, all of them have got acting, you know, colleagues, as well as 3, you know, positions at corporate level. So within the month of Feb, we'll have made appointments, you know, of those permanent positions. But the weaknesses that you rightfully do identify, you know, we'll have to, you know, attend to them as well speedily, and I can assure you that we're doing so. With regards to the war room, I'm not sure, Minister, I can talk to some of it. Yes, there were targets that were set. You mentioned on-time performance, you know, trains, and the restrictions in terms of, you know, the network, speed restrictions, that is. Yes, we've not met those targets at the time, and some of the reasons I think I've alluded to. So, you know, in terms of getting trains on service, you need to get the equipment, the parts that we referred to, and the components. So that has made it a bit difficult for us in that regard to reach those targets. So we didn't meet them as we had indicated. On-time performance is impacted quite a lot by, you know, vandalism of our network, you know, because if you notice, you wake up in the morning, you know, and there's a rail line that has been vandalized. That has an impact in terms of us achieving that on-time performance. The speed restrictions, we're not doing too badly, I think, on the speed restrictions, I must say, because we've managed to work on parts of our network. I think KZN is a case in point. We've got tamping machines there that are actually upgrading the pairway, and that's we've reduced the sections where we had speed restrictions. I was there over the weekend, you know, Zwele 2 and all those stations. So we've looked at that, and there's progress that we're making, you know, on that score. And I think part of the problem also related, besides vandalism, you know, getting the relevant equipment like those tamping machines in order to be able to upgrade your network. Okay, then, yeah, punishing officials, we're working on that. I think we've indicated, Chair, that we will make relevant announcements soon. With regards to skills, I wouldn't say at this stage that this is, you know, the thing that these things you don't do immediately, but I would want to say that we do have the Gibela facility, which, you know, I've looked at and visited over the period. You know, some of our colleagues are working there and are being trained, so there is a skills program that is taking place within that environment. But also, I think the point that you make is important for us to recognize, because apart from, you know, the main focus in terms of ensuring that we transport our commuters safely, predictably, one of the things that we need to be doing around PRASA is to bring pride back to that sector. And that means we need to see PRASA as a train, you know, transportation train center of excellence. We need to bring that back, and that's within our plans. But, you know, one doesn't want to overpromise within a 12-month period. We already left to 10 months. Because, you know, one would have started during a quiet period. So I think we need to be cognizant of that and be realistic. So, but it's something that we certainly would be, you know, be keen to look at, in terms at least setting the base for the long term. I think the issues around the board between Martha and Mapule, you'll come back to them. But with regards to the central line, maybe just to pick on that, the member raised it. It is a focus, Chair. And I did indicate that that's one of the priority programs and how we are actually approaching it. We are engaging with commuter stakeholders around the area, which we did 2 weeks ago. Honorable Hadebe was present. and we're having another engagement on Thursday to go through the detailed plans now with the commuter stakeholders around that area. So it is a key focus. The minister has put a lot of priority and on these two corridors in particular, Central Line and Mabopane, and we're putting in, you know, an integrated plan that we will look at. The issue would relate to other spheres of government. We are beginning to get into this stage, I must say. There's been, you know, it hasn't been that much time, at least for me, but I have given the colleagues, you know, instructions to engage with you know, other spheres of government. I mean, to give an example, talking about Park Station, just as an example, our CCTV cameras there, they are working, but we don't have backup.
you know, so in the control room, you do have the guys in the control room, but they can't communicate, you know, directly to the security on the ground. So it actually doesn't quite work. But what has happened and that has assisted us there is our joint operations with the Metro Police and utilizing their infrastructure on a daily basis to be able to reconcile. And so that's the value of intergovernmental, you know, relations. So we do appreciate that, and I think we're going to expedite, you know, our approaches. Minister has also been leading here in the Western Cape, you know, discussions with the city as well as the province, and we're going to work with them on that. So that will take on board as a suggestion that we want to move quite quickly on. Chair, I think the issues that relate to the executives and authority to act and who approve procurement processes, the head of legal, Martha, you'll need to speak to that. And then the solvency part, CFO, you'll touch on it, but I think it kind of dances around the issues that I was indicating, you know, with the regular request for conversion of CAPEX to OPEX, which is what, you know, assists the business keep afloat. The situation is bad, so we're not saying that it is good. So that's what it is. I think, CFO, if you can speak to the consultants as well. The last point, Chair, relating to balancing proper planning with agency, we take that point. Safe to say that a lot of these interventions and plans were in place, but they've just not been going through to implementation. So we're not planning new things. We are taking what has been there, what has been put, you know, has been in the system, designs, you know, all we need to do is just verify them and ensure that they're implementable, scrutinize them, and then take them through the system. So we don't have, you know, the luxury of time, but we've assessed those that are there, and we think it's things that should have been done, you know, a long time ago. Martha, can you also, in your response, speak to the legal contracts as well as workmen's? Thank you, Chair.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I'm going to speak about the issue of solvency. Chairperson, when you look at the balance sheet of BRASA, which I'll just use the last financial statements of the 31st of March 2019, which is what the members are familiar with, and the situation has not really changed from then to today. When you look at it at the face value, BRASA is solvent. But when you're peeling the leaves out, BRASA is not solvent. And I'm saying this because the administrator spoke about the 20 billion close, 20 billion odd of the money that we have in the balance sheet. When you look at that money that we have in the balance sheet and the total elements that measure solvency, and you look at the liabilities that we have, you say BRASA has got a lot of money, but that money is reserved for CAPEX, and therefore we cannot use that money to fund our operations. And you made an analogy when we were looking at that slide that shows the average revenue on a monthly basis and expenses, which clearly shows you that there's a deficit of about 200-odd million on a monthly basis that is not being covered, which relates to operations. And there are various factors, revenue leakages. It's really one of the main elements that makes us to be where we are. And the question is, where is that 200 million odd on a monthly basis going to? It's going to that 3 billion of liabilities that you have clearly pointed out in the presentation that the administrator has done. So from servicing our operations, the current liability is growing on a regular basis. However, we are not throwing our hands in the air. Through the engagement that the initiative that the administrator has alluded to of fast-tracking our CAPEX, because if you don't spend your CAPEX, your infrastructure is not working, the service is declining, and therefore it has an impact on your revenue. That's number one. Number two is that things like fencing, when your infrastructure is open, you are vulnerable. People are not paying for the services that are supposed to be paid. And he also talked about the financial modeling that we are busy with to say, what does BRASA need in the short, medium, and long term to achieve its optimal financial position. So we cannot talk about the figures now because we are still busy doing that. However, we are engaging with our shareholder, Department of Transport, to say in terms of this model that we are doing today, this is what we are doing. We are also engaging with Treasury to say this is what we are doing. It's not going to be a quick fix. It's going to be a long-term process. And maybe we might even have to look at the subsidy that is being allocated currently to BRASA to say, as a broken organization as it is, the subsidy today is this much. BRASA is generating this revenue. It's leaving this deficit. How does that deficit need to be addressed, rather, in a short, medium, and long term? But we'll have those discussions accurately when we have the model done. Chairperson, you asked about the 47% of employees' cost, whether it includes the consultants' cost. No, those are just pure employee cost for BRASA. It does not include consultants. Consultants are under expenditure. And within our business, we've got project management units, we've got people there, but we still have project management consultants that are coming to assist us. And some of those are needed for regulatory purpose, because if you are in civil engineering space, you'll need a professional that is registered, etc. So those are the things that we will be looking at, as I alluded earlier, to say that in the budget process of 2021 MTF, we're going to look at the excess capacity that we have and say, okay, if we've got this fully fledged project management unit, but we're employing this project management company, what does ours do? Do we really need this one or whatever that is needed? And we've got, in most government departments, you find that ICT, functions like legal, insurance, we've got staff complement, but you've got consultants that are coming to complement that service. So those are the discussions that we will be having during the budget process to really interrogate to say that, okay, is the cost of consultants that we are paying justifiable given the existing structure that we have?
Okay. I think that is fine. All right. Before we go to legal, Honorable Liz, you've got a smaller than a skeleton. All right. We'll take... let's do this. Let's get the full set of responses. Then Honourable Liz, Honourable Somi, Honourable Hadebe. Right, legal?
Thank you, Chair. On the question of risk that was raised as to, you know, we've been in existence for so long and there's been so many problems within the organisation, I think it's important to state outright that the culture of risk within PRASA is just non-existent. Risk management is a problem. And this issue has been raised for as long as I have occupied this position. For instance, when we do the planning in terms of, you know, preparing for the shareholder, the corporate plan and so on, we would insist on having a risk assessment done as far as that is concerned so that we know exactly what is going on. But however, because the decisions, you know, did not rest with us. They rested with the powers that be. In most instances, we were overruled.
The board.
Yes. I would like to also mention the fact that, having regard to the problems that we've had internally, we have last year with the board that existed, we had said to them, can we have a risk workshop? In fact, the two previous boards, we had arranged to have a risk workshop where, for instance, we have recognized that the responsibility of risk sits with the board. And we had expressed this every other day to say, unless the management of risk is top-down, the organization is not going to function in the manner that it's supposed to function. We were speaking to deaf ears as a reality. And that became a problem for us as management, because what one was doing was just reporting and raising issues, but nothing was done to it. The risk workshops that were planned for did not take place. They didn't take place. The employees went all out to identify the risks, but when it came to time to plan the risk workshops, they were cancelled. Once again, it was something beyond our control. There's a lot of examples, Chair, that I can give where we had identified the risks. Take, for instance, the security contracts. When the contracts were cancelled by the board, we raised the red flag. We said, the risks are huge when you cancel these contracts without having the contingency plans in place. We identified those risks, but we were outnumbered as far as the board was concerned, because that decision was the decision of the board and there was nothing else that we could do. And at the end of the day, we had nowhere to go. And what we did, we even at the appeal stage, once again, gave advice to the board to say, do not do this. There's a different approach that we can take as management to make sure that we don't fall foul of, you know, the problems that we had. But once again, we were overruled. The board went to an extent themselves of briefing lawyers to the exclusion of the legal function, because they did not agree with the approach that we were taking in terms of identifying the risks that we had identified. They proceeded. We were fortunate when the minister made the changes, and I think for also from ourselves, it was a relief that we didn't now have to deal with the hindrances that we had and the frustrations that we had as management in relation to the challenges that we were seeing and the risks that we identified but that were ignored. When the minister appointed the administrator, the first thing that we did, we went to the administrator and the DG and we said, please help. We cannot proceed with the appeal process of the security contracts. Can we find a different way? Fortunately, our plea was heeded to, and the administrator said, do not appeal. And that is why we had a bit of stability in between as far as those contracts were concerned. There's a number of examples that one can give where we went in. There was a point where, for instance, we had nowhere to go. We went to the minister. Minister Bladen Zimande, the minute he took office, we went to him, we said, Minister, help. The governance situation within PRASA is just not acceptable. Where even that board was taking decisions at a management level and signing contracts and negotiating settlements when they were not supposed to and they were not authorized to. And when we raised those issues as a legal function, we were then either threatened with suspensions, threatened with disciplinary hearings, and in a number of instances, I guess, removed. I mean, I've been removed a number of times at PRASA, I guess, because of the issues that I had raised that people didn't like. So from a risk perspective, it's been a tall order, Chairperson, that we've not had, you know, the support from the powers that be to enable us to deal with the risk profile. Just yesterday, in fact, when we were sitting at EXCO leading the governance committee, we requested the administrator to allow us to elevate the risk reporting again into EXCO, because even though risk was an item on the agenda at EXCO, in many instances, the risk issues would not be dealt with. So these are some of the challenges that we've had, but it is not that the function has not operated. Right now, if you look at the third quarter performance, the risk portfolio is the one that has managed to do what it's supposed to do, but it's just doing. The implementation thereof has been a difficulty, and this is something that we're working on. So I just wanted to give that to say it's been a tall order, and it's not been an area that was easy because, you know, decisions were made elsewhere. As far as the legal panel is concerned, yes, indeed, the legal panel of PRASA was found to be irregular, I think, 2015-16, yeah? And yes, indeed, when PRASA and Transnet did the split, what had happened is that the Transnet panel moved across to PRASA. So it had been in existence for a long time. So there had been, in fact, the fourth attempt now to have the legal panel, a new legal panel, being put in place. But throughout, the process had been scuppered such that the current lawyers remained, and yes, indeed, Worksmans was on that panel. of attorneys that was declared to be an irregular panel. And in fact, it was when the AG was doing the work that when it looked at the appointment of worksmiths, that it realized that the legal panel had been irregular and needed to be changed. And as the administrators indicated now, even after we had gone out on a tender now for the legal panel, it still didn't materialize. So the administrator is pursuing another angle to make sure that we've got lawyers in place. So that's effectively where we are, and that's why you would have a lot of, as the CFO has indicated, a lot of irregularities, you know, pertaining to, obviously, the legal matters that are there. There's quite a lot. I mean, every day we get summons and we've got to defend from a process perspective. And what has had to happen is that we've had to be using the very same panel that is there. But currently what the administrator has indicated to us is that no legal matter, for instance, would no law firm would be instructed without his decision. So that's what we are putting in place right now so that, you know, we just don't continue carrying on with using the panel that's in place. So that's a process that he's brought in. Also, in terms of the Chairperson, in terms of the procurement process, once again, as a function, we had identified the fact that we've got problems within the SCM space, and we had suggested stopgap measures, you know, to the board to say, in the interim, to allow PRASA to be able to spend this money that it's supposed to be spending, can we do this? We gave them a whole opinion and advice on how we believe that the company can operate with, you know, making sure that we comply with processes. Once again, that was not supported. We waited, you know, and the approvals didn't come. The approvals effectively of the tender, the supply chain policy came about when we were doing the geo and the security tenders because, you know, it became imperative that we have that because there were huge tenders. But again, Chairperson, you know, the governance issues within the organization and the leadership that we've had in the past have really hampered how it is that the organization must operate. And the number of months that were taken for decisions to be made was really frustrating to management. And it just became, you know, the problem that we currently have. And perhaps I can also talk to the issue of the board. My direct reportee was the company secretary before the present company secretary was in place. What I understood is that there were challenges even as far as meetings were concerned. What would happen is that there would be changes. Every time the minutes must be approved, there would be arguments to say what you have drafted is not proper. And when the suggestion would then be made to say, can we then go back to the tapes? Because that's your point of reference. You go back to the tapes and you then say, can we then listen to the tapes and hear what is being said? That would not be agreed to. You ask the question why. And as management, you then find yourself, again, hamstrung. What is it that you do when you sit in a meeting? I mean, not so long ago, the audit committee meeting had approved something happened. They'd forgotten that they'd approved it. Fortunately, we had a document that showed that the chairperson, you signed this thing as a resolution coming from that, but they had forgotten. And these are the challenges, Chair, that I thought perhaps let me raise them, because it's important to also understand that it is just not management, but because of, you know, us not being able to then just move on with things without the necessary authorities, we found ourselves really hamstrung. Okay. Thank you.
All right. That is fine. You have said a lot. But here, your mic, Eligo, your mic. Here we always adopt the Hamba Gahle approach. We
will want those reports that did not receive the attention that was due to them. And I'm sure once we have kick-started the process that we are going to kick-start, there will be constant and continuous engagement on it. But you may have confirmed our outlook. Right, there was an administrator Nduchukonoksalayo, the Segesi touches and like, but Nishiyan in the Bayer vetting SCM, want to know, tell those people there vetted.
Yes, thanks, Chair. That's the point. I realized that I'd missed. In our first engagement with EXCO, at least my first EXCO meeting on 7 Jan, I raised the issue of vetting. Wanting to understand how far that had gone, or at least if the colleagues were vetted at EXCO level in particular. And the response I received was that that had not been completed. Colleagues had not returned forms and, you know, all sorts of petty issues. I then instructed that that process needs to be expedited so that as we cascade it down to other levels, EXCO is vetted. So
is EXCO
not complete?
No, I'm saying is this EXCO?
This is EXCO.
Okay. I have the ones here submitted, return their forms.
The last time, Chair, they had, some of them hadn't, and colleagues, you can speak for yourselves. They hadn't, and which was a problem. So that's the one thing, the vetting, Chair, which has not been completed, and I'm pushing for us to finalize that. Linked to that are two other issues that I've put, you know, on the agenda. Declaration of private interest, which has not been happening in the organization, as well as lifestyle audits, you know. And so we've presented a policy. There are just some changes that we need to make, but the commitment I'm making is that we need to have completed the vetting, the declaration of interest, as well as the lifestyle audits of the top 300 senior members of staff by March, with the assistance of the state agency like SSA.
Okay. The ESCO, so that's where we're going to start. So, administrator, by next week Wednesday, close of business, we would want the full register of the progress of each member of ESCO. So you go back, compile it, so that we know. I'm still deciding in my head whether we'll ask the ones that are here how far they with their compliance, but I'm applying my mind, so, yeah. All right, Honorable Liz, Honorable Somya, Honorable Khadem.
Mr. Chairman, just some clarity. I'm sorry I'm pushing this funding thing. You say there's 20 billion, give or take, in CapEx funding available, but you also say you've been converting that to OpEx. How much has been converted? How much actual cash is available for CapEx? And how much of the 20 billion has been converted without authority? In other words, you've just spent the money out of it because it happens to be in the bank and you need it to pay salaries or whatever. So please, just some little bit more detail about the actual CapEx cash availability. How much has been authorized for OPEX and how much has been used for OPEX without authorization. Then just to get back to the brake pads, apparently on the 22nd of January, the rail safety regulator sent a letter to PRASA instructing that action be taken to ensure that new brake blocks were available because they were none available and they were using second-hand ones.
All right, Honorable Somya.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Let me appreciate the responses. Though indeed they elicit some kind of further probe in some of the instances, but I'm going to restrict myself somewhat. But it would start to the Minister. The minister's wisdom has prevailed to appoint the administrator, and now we unravel the tall order. reality of what really, as we dig deeper, what really entails for the minister to be successful to turn things around with Frasa. It might be the fact that the initial period is a one year period, which itself comes before the next audit, the next audit period. The audit came just in the middle of the financial year's audit period, and was going to end in the middle of the upcoming audit period. And then one of the instances of success measures is to reach a reputable operational outcome in as far as the responses on the Auditor General's assertion in as far as the company is concerned. But I'll leave that to the minister, probably his consideration around that. But I was just trying to probe here whether is that a regulated timeline in as far as that is concerned. I agree with you, it should be very short, but at the same time, it must be a bit reasonable for you. When we ask you the question, have you achieved what you wanted to achieve in as far as this whole thing is concerned, so that we don't sub-whip around on that factor. But I'll leave it to you as your prerogative. The second area is the area that relates to the very same question I think Honorable Lee has dealt with, the operations, capital expenditure taking from this. I simplify it by saying now we're really on the path of robbery. You see, robbing these to deal with this and so forth, if we have not defined our pathway. And you're saying you're going to come up with a structure which is going to model around how are you going to deal with these. But coming from the four streams in as far as your fare structure is concerned, and in terms of the income, you see that you make. Is it possible, I don't want to just to force that, is it possible that probably through your chair that we can get some kind of a model structure within a defined period? Because if we allow that to happen, would be in a symptomatic path. You see, Ujanji, Ungana plan, we have both Ushelenji, Manusu Samazinki, Zinki Lukala, Usu Selisbin, Pidukala food, Ilelu Selegu Yavu, Ingana Mans, but woman Usu Samazinki. So I think getting to a path of a solution, let's be certain about that. Maybe that wisdom will come from your summary in as far as that is concerned in terms of that kind of a structure of a model of the finances. Because sustenance of that company becomes so critical. It serves the downtrodden. You see, the working class, those who must reach the point of employing time safer and get back home, you see, safer. And those kinds of things requires us, when we represent them, we must represent them quite appropriately. But on the financial side, the modeling must be a bit sound for us to accept such a situation. The second last area is on this thing of the risk. You know, I hear you see the entirety of the account in as far as that is concerned. It is indeed very much unfortunate that this account comes. And the board is no more. You know, we have the administrator there, but it as well gets into the similar, same outlook at dealing with. Is the dismissal the only indicative act for
such, you see, individuals who have been occupying these positions, when we have lost a lot which was ought to be accounted for public good, what else needs to be done? You see, what sort of an exemplary instance that we could charge, you see, in as far as execution of those duties diligently and reputably to those who are given such tasks in a way. Here we are, one of the executives is crying foul of the fact that from time to time I've done my duty. Those who ought to somewhat be responsible for the nature of absolute governance have denied me that right, have subsequently denied the institution some repute in as far as the act that ought to be occurrence of the day in that institution. So it ought to be this thing that says, no. Our bandu who have been in this kind of a institution as board members, there must be some kind of further indulgence looking into what else that needs to be done appropriately directed at them. When we go to Lumali, Mali, which was supposed to go to CAPEX, Yatata for operations, it's not because of a sudden failure. It has been somewhat systematic occurrence. You see, right through, it is visible through the absence of minutes, unadoption of such minutes, and the selective, wisdom in terms of dealing with matters of governance, and those who are responsible have just been let loose by just keeping them away from that occupation. What else that needs to be done when it comes to that a kind of a situation? But thanks for the account, because it is really necessary that we must know what is actually happening into such institutions, and be able to cultivate a new culture which should respect. Why do you employ and you create a structure then I'm not going to respect it? Why do you employ individuals and you pay them you are not necessarily going to take heed into what they are coming up with? So it's just a malicious compliance, nothing else, and we must somewhat have a way of dealing. The last point which I wanted to raise a chair is a question that relates to the actual the focus of success between now and then. That then is when the administrator leaves. Though I've initially dealt with the point there, that these are the things which I think they need to be timed quite appropriately. That well, you have for this thing 3 months, this 2 months, this 4 months, this, and when we call them again, which should be probably your a part of your submission as a matter of a strength of our interaction with them, would be that at least these kinds of areas have somewhat been achieved, and therefore our comfort goes further in support of whatever is happening there. Because PRASA is about movement of people, movement of goods, and if that is the case, the economy, the activity, the activeness of those who contribute to the economy of the country are linked up with the functionality of PRASA one way or the other. So if we want to make success of such a scenario, we must be able to ensure that the rents and cents that are aligned to the functionality of that institution are somewhat there. So I'm wary of this thing, taking money from CAPEX and trying to throw it into some kind of operational arrangement. Otherwise, we would be
getting back into the original situation. So there must be a moderate plan which is going to show sustainability of PRASA going forward. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. And then Honorable Hadebe, my colleagues, we are scheduled to complete our meeting at 1. That's the time it's set. So if we can move to that, and then Honorable Dex. So we've got 44 minutes. But also because I'm a laptop,
if you're telling us that you do not have a risk management strategy, you do not have a risk register that details the nature of a risk and mitigation measures in place, Do you have such currently since the administrator has taken over within this 2 months period? Because I think that should be your key focus area, particularly the issue of security. If it was raised as a risk and someone deliberately decided to ignore, we need to measure the implication of that decision, and those who deliberately ignored the risk must be held accountable, even if they're no longer part of PRASA. We cannot allow such to continue. Google Buffalo's book, we can't. The second issue, Worksman legal panel declared illegal, and you're still utilizing their services. What informs such a decision? If they were able to cancel the security contract that they perceived that was declared illegal, yet this panel still continued to benefit even though it's declared irregular. What informs that decision? If I can just get an understanding. Lastly, Chair, on the issue of insolvency, is PRASA and the Exco not trading recklessly as a business if you are operating on a deficit?
All right. And then Honorable Doug, yeah, the last one.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to reiterate again the importance of the company secretary, because ultimately the buck will stop with the company secretary. I hope that she's not a secretary, because actually she's an SG. She's not a secretary. You're a company secretary. Yeah, she's an SG. If you look at Section 88 of the Constitution, the duties and functions of a company secretary, if you read the King's report on corporate governance, on the functions and duties of the company secretary, and when things don't go, are not going right, what empowers you to do, what action you should take. It's a major responsibility. You are not a secretary to take minutes in board meetings. You're a company secretary. The bank will stop by you at the end of the day. So go and read the King's report on it. Go look at Section 88 of the Constitution, what to say about the company secretary. It is crucial. I'm raising these issues because it seems like the previous board had no clue what they were doing. Because hearing the response from the colleague next to the company secretary there, on what actually happened, it's scary what has happened at PRASA. And I want to fully support and agree that we must submit a report to Parliament, because we must get them declared delinquent directors. We must go to court and get those people declared delinquent directors. You can't do these things that they have been doing. It is highly irregular, irresponsible, it's criminal what they have done. Like the day when the chairperson of the board came, she flew down with the driver to drive her around in Cape Town. How can you fly down to Cape Town with the driver to drive you in Cape Town around? It's wrong that they can't allow. It's obvious that board had no clue what they were doing. They had no clue what they were doing. And that's why I'm raising these things to the company secretary. She must understand her role. Company secretary, you're not a secretary. Your responsibility is huge. So please, we must submit a report to Parliament on those members of that board. Thank you.
No, we will. I will request that the responses are not as tall as me, so that that we are short and succinct. I think the points have been succinctly made. They are captured, and then we'll develop the way forward so that we can conclude in good time. Right, Administrator, I'll hand over to you and we'll your final comments.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
Also, of course, the response to the issues that have been raised by the four members.
Okay, Chair, thank you. We'll split the issues. I think the colleagues would have taken notes of the areas that are relevant to them, particularly with regards to the issue around funding CAPEX. I think I've given the global picture, and the CFO can give the and provide the details. On the break blocks, the letter from RSR I haven't received. I'll follow up with the nominated manager because they communicate through them. I'll follow up on it, and we'll take the necessary actions with regards to that.
Okay, so I think second honourable list, do you want that information submitted once he has followed up? All right, let's use next week as a timeline so that we can bring that question to a logical conclusion. In writing. Yeah, in writing. So all the things that will be requested for in writing to next week Wednesday. Okay?
Okay, the point, Chair, around the financial model structure, I think you'll give us guidance, but it's something that we're working on. It's an initiative we had taken because we felt it was important to be able to have a future state that we can work towards. And that also impacts on the various initiatives, that we need to put in place with that in mind. So as much as we're working on a 12-month period, but I think it's important to note that we're setting a foundation, because PRASA will live beyond 12 months. So we're setting a sustainable foundation, for the future. I think the risk issues will be indulged upon. Maybe Martha, you can still speak to that. But I think, the issue there, Chair, is you've got the board, you also had management in place. So we need to look at these things in balance and not, yeah. So whatever the outcome of that will be, needs to look at all who were participating at that point in the organization. Focus of our success areas, I think we've given a sense of initiatives, but primarily would want to, in the short term, to ensure that, our policy environment and standard operating procedures are in place. We fill the critical vacancies. We ensure that increasingly there are more train sets now with what I've mentioned around components and parts, on our railways or rail lines, and that we appoint contractors that will then start doing, the work in the various areas, in particular, the two priority areas, Central Line as well as, Mabopane. Risk management strategy, legal will have to respond to that. Watchmen's and the panel that continues to be utilized that is illegal, I think you need to also respond to that. And then CFO, the reckless trading question. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of conversion of OPEX, of CAPEX to OPEX, I just don't want us to leave here maybe leaving the impression that this process is not managed properly. As PRASA, we cannot convert CAPEX to OPEX without having the approval of National Treasury. So to date, what has been converted is 1.6 billion, and that has been approved by National Treasury through our shareholder, where rigorous process went through. Questions were asked by Treasury and the shareholder, and those were successfully responded to. Hence, we were able to receive that money. So when we are transferring CAPEX to OPEX, we also evaluate the impact that it will have on our capital program. So it's a risk that we have identified and we are managing, and the fact that we are able to submit to Treasury and to the shareholder the mitigations that we are doing, because we look at the progress of a CAPEX program, whether by transferring will it jeopardize the success. And we cannot transfer money if it will jeopardize the success of that capital program. So I just want to give members an assurance to say that this process is well managed, it's well controlled, and it's not only within the ambit of PRASA, it includes the shareholder and it includes the National Treasury. Okay.
Right, and then finally, Nick.
Mr. Chairman, that actually doesn't my question.
completely. My question is, was any of that cash used without approval? If the answer is no, that's the answer. You haven't answered that. And then how much of the cash is actually available for CapEx? The figure was 20 million. Is that after the transfers or is it before?
Quick response.
Yes, before my time, there was money that was used for CapEx without transferring. Yes, for CapEx was used to transfer to OPEX. And we have put measures in place to ensure that that hole is closed. Today, as we are sitting, it's about 100 million that we still have to close that was used. The second question is the 20.7 billion is what is available for CapEx as at the 31st of December. And that is after that conversion of 1.6 billion that I've spoken about.
Whether
I just wanted to check whether I've responded.
Yeah, if you don't worry, if he's not answered, he will indicate.
Okay.
I will recognize
fine.
Them after he's indicated. All right?
Okay.
Yes, that's where I'm going.
Whether we are trading recklessly, no, we are not trading recklessly because you can only trade recklessly if you are trading with your assets, your liabilities exceeding your assets. So Prasa's liabilities are not exceeding the assets as I have indicated. We have this problem of liability, short-term liability, that I've talked that we are engaging with the shareholder, with National Treasury through shareholder to close that gap. We know where the gap is coming from. Prasa has been budgeting a deficit budget for over a number of years. That should have not been allowed. That we are in this situation because of that. So we should not, when you're saying that we are operating on a deficit, that is a PFMA issue. Public Finance Management Act is clear. You cannot incur expenditure where you don't have a budget. But that has been what was happening. And now we are saying we're putting a stop to that. We're engaging openly with the shareholder to say the money that we are generating as Prasa is not sufficient to meet our operations. As an interim solution, the conversion of CapEx to OPEX is what will relieve the situation, but for a short term. In the long term, the model that we are talking about is the one that will say for Prasa to be financially sustainable, it will take this period and it will require these resources and it will require the following rationalization of our expenses. So probably as the administrator said, it will take guidance from your side. We engaging with the shareholder on the model. We will be comfortable to bring something here once we follow the protocol, but guidance will be taken from the chair.
Okay. Right, legal finally.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the risk registers, we do have risk registers. They're there. What we've got a strategic risk register, and we've assisted the various operations also to have operational risk registers. So those are in place, and we'll be happy to make those available. It's obviously just the implementation and management of those that become, you know, a bit of a challenge. In relation to Worksmans, the entire panel effectively is irregular. So it's all the lawyers that would have been on that panel that are irregular. And I guess the Worksmans issue is compounded by the fact that there was an investigation that was ordered, obviously, by the board for them to conduct this. And the matters that they're currently involved in are those matters that flowed from the investigations. So, you know, it's where we find ourselves and where we've had to live with, because they started the process. And some of the matters have taken quite long to complete, and they're still in current, you know. So instead of incurring other costs, but we wouldn't be able to do that in any event because we still don't have a panel in place. You know, as I indicated, all the attempts to try and put a new panel in place have not succeeded. So it's the challenge that we currently have internally.
All right.
Okay.
What, colleagues, administrator, legal, your mic.
Chair, just on the Worksman's issue, something that we'll need to look at. I think besides, you know, the broad panel being irregular, the issue that related to the appointment you know, the questions around it, in that another company was appointed first for the work and then ended up, you know, being undertaken by Worksmen. So I think that issue also needs to be dealt with, and it has been highlighted in the AG's report.
Okay. All right, colleagues, we are nearing the end. I just want to conclude by saying, and then we'll hand over to the Minister. To say all that has been said sounds good, and we welcome what I can call very transparent responses. It seems like there is light at the end of the tunnel. The tragedy we must avoid is for that light not to be an oncoming train, to actually be light at the end of the tunnel, and for us to come out of this catastrophe and total collapse of governance structures at PRASA. It baffles the mind as to why SOEs continue to find themselves not operating like businesses, like they should. There's an over-reliance on the hope that the taxpayer will always bail us out when things go south and reach rock bottom. And that situation must be avoided at all costs here at PRASA. The resources are not infinite. And so we need to make an example practically, so for every other entity, state-owned enterprise, to recognize that this nonsense needs to end here and go no further. And so we that is why PRASA becomes, is going to become, rather, the arena in which we're going to demonstrate our own resolve this side. And as I said, Minister, we welcome the move to dissolve the board, as it was an interim board nonetheless, but we welcome that, and we believe that it was decisive. And my plea, Minister, is that you engage with your other colleagues to be as cooperative as you are, as and when we call upon them to come here. In as much as you are expected to comply, but we appreciate the fact that we don't have to go to heaven and earth via some dark place to get you to come here. It makes working very difficult. At times the resistance we receive does not augur well for oversight and checks and balances, and the demonstration of respect for this institution. So next week we will receive the vetting on Olela today, but your names must not appear on that list of people who have not submitted. So you want the management. How far is that process for management? Then we will take it from there. We will discuss it as a committee, so it will end up being public nonetheless. So there's no fitla. We will publish that. The model that has been proposed, I will tread with caution. We do not want to be the player and the referee. And there is a PC, so you're still going to go and present your APP to the portfolio committee and then present your budget to Parliament. So what we will do is that post the budget vote, you will then come back. We will have had sight of your APP and looked at your budget and had the minister's budget speech, and I think that would have given enough time for you to have gone ahead with all the work that you need to do. So that being the case, we will see you around about May. Should there be a need for you to come back prior, we will call you prior to that, because we still have other things that you must deal with. We will be interacting in the interim, colleagues, with the law enforcement agencies, particularly the Hawks, on the cases of PRASA that are on the roll, so that by that time comes we've had sight of everything. So we will deal with the matters seriatim, so that by the time they come back we have dealt with all of them. On the issue of the declaration of these board members as delinquent directors, I want to propose that we move ahead with that. But the foundation be a fully-fledged parliamentary inquiry first to establish the facts so that we move ahead with that court process, having satisfied ourselves here. So it's not one of those long-winded things, but we will have to take time to collect the evidence and move ahead with that. So what I will request is, Ms. Ntombi, can you interact with parliamentary legal? I will do so myself, for them to draw up the roadmap which will lead to us arriving at that particular point. Because it cannot just be the previous board, the immediate previous board. You're dealing with historic matters here. There have been boards prior, they have, and so on. So we'll need to look at the whole list, the whole age analysis, and identify where the shortcomings were. So we'll have to rely on the AG, his audit outcomes, we'll rely on management letters, we'll request those, so that we bring this PRASA matter to a logical conclusion. People will say, why PRASA when there are other entities? Because the majority of our people rely on PRASA. We can debate the views about SAA, whether you keep it or don't keep it. At a later stage, that's not for us here. But what is for us here is the sustainability of the PRASA, because the poor rely on an effective and efficient service. Because what's the alternative if PRASA is no longer there? If SAA tanks today, you fly another airline. What do our people do? So here we've got a moral obligation as public reps to ensure that our people's interests are safeguarded. So we are going to move full steam ahead, and colleagues, once we have drafted the resolution, we'll move ahead with it so that the legal processes can kick in this. So that there's never a repeat of this thing before. Minister, we encourage you at this point, but we'll probably resolve on this on a transparent process for the board in one way or the other. No. Let there be my interviews if need be, so that we know who we are getting to come into these spaces. That concerns us. I think what I say in conclusion, if there's any other information when we meet, we will pull it all together and we will communicate with you. Administrator, I just have this to say. Today may have been a pleasant meeting because it was an introductory meeting. Our support for you has got terms and conditions. It's not a blank check. Do the right thing and meet your commitment. Come and account for them, because if you don't, we will throw you in the same basket as those with which whom we are pursuing. So I hope that the pleasantries of today do not set into motion a laissez-faire attitude, but a demonstration of our support and cooperation, but importantly our expectation that you dare not fail, because it is our people who are dependent on you to exercise your responsibilities for their betterment. So I think, colleagues, we will leave it at that from our side. Minister, we will give you now to conclude and have your reactions, and hope that the information we require comes next week. We will interact with the portfolio committee on the issues of the model, but I think it's best housed there. We will communicate with the chair which there's a matter that they must prioritize as this particular one. So, as we to our minister, Razma Taz, and ngagcina mine housing ungishaya ngihamdinga. So ke Minister Hamdinga, over to you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. We'll be very brief. I think the decision to put PRASA under administration has not been an easy one. First time I came here, I want to repeat what I said at the beginning. I said, and it was said by the DG, by the way, which in our discussion it reflected to this committee in the presence of the chair of the board at that time, that the minister shortfall of putting PRASA under administration. And by 12 midnight when I left, I thought that decision I withheld for some time has been wrong. And I went back and I said, DG, this board must go. And that has been implemented. I'm very clear, we could have taken an easy path to say that let's go for another board, but this place is broken. Management, non-functioning, and you needed a tool at your disposal that will bring semblance. Not that Bongi, when he leaves, everything will be hunky-dory, but the way it is rotten to the core, rotten. No systems. In the report that he gave us, he said that there are no files there, Minister. Back up. What you see in my computer is what you've got. I can't go back and say that something has been lost. Let me go to the system and retrieve the files. So this committee and everybody else and so on, that has been the case. That's why you go back and forth about simple thing, minutes. I was a Secretary General of the Youth League. I couldn't leave a meeting without minutes, because when I go for the audit books of the Youth League, the auditors ask me, where are the minutes that took this resolution? That time we were not even in power. And I didn't know that for not taking records could land me in jail, because I can't twist the arm of auditors. They are independent. And one of my auditors at that time was in this board that I dissolved, of PRASA. So, I'm just saying that I knew that. Now, you come to a board that you expect that these are educated people, they are running things professionally, and then you listen to this thing, it's a black my party element. And then you are running billions of South African people, money, yabantu, billions. You don't have minutes of the board, you come to Scopa, you think that is simple. Billions of rands is about to pass South Africa. You are running them every day, in and out, you're supposed to be proper. You don't have systems. This is supposed to be responsible for running rail and all of that, transporting our people, and we invest a lot of money into that. I mean, there's something wrong with all of us. If ever we will then, you know, not act on that and all of that, there's something wrong. There will be something wrong. And that is why we thought about this. And I'm committed on this thing of the board. We will get back to the board for PRASA, and people will be interviewed and they'll be interrogated, because in these big boards, like PRASA, SAA, you can't just rock up with a small suit there and then, hey, I'm ready, I can be a board and all of that, and then you look good. It cannot be. Where are we now with SAA? Where are we now with ESCOM? We've been going up and down, Casey and Jojo, I mean, with people who have never assisted the system. And all that, our system is good because it has got checks and balances. Even if the minister is asleep, but SCOPA and the portfolio committee can help you see that you don't have people there. Where you said you have appointed people, they can help you. Because we are called in those committees not to observe, to participate. And MPs, when they pose questions, you can realize yourself that, no, I thought I've got a board, but there is a problem. And that is what is the exciting thing about our democracy. It's basically alive. even the minister, and all of that, if we don't act on issues. Now, my point, I don't want to waste your time, Chair. One of the things I said to the administrator, I said, we will not tolerate ineptness. You've got the power to act, and act decisively. We're not going to reach June here, and Bongi is telling us one and the same story. And he's got the plan, he's not implementing it. It's not gonna, then why do we have an administrator? You are sitting in the office, you're sitting with people who defy your decisions, and who are not implementing what you're supposed to come to Skopo. Why? Why are you not taking decisions? You've got to move. You know, I mean, the stories that have been explained here, that boss don't act, they don't help. There's professionalism, capacity. Administrator is not alone. He has brought in people from other entities of the state with capabilities, including treasury. So he's not running his show alone. Who are going to assist him to realize this task? I said to him, I'm not going to come next to you. I'm going to support you. When they say DOT is supporting what they are supposed to do, I'm very clear. He will never achieve what he said he will, except if there is money to do that. Now, my department goes to Treasury together with them. They plot, Treasury approves, we move forward the account. Within 12 months, 6 months from now, there's got to be semblance, but decisions must be taken. Of course, World Cup is not all that is bad. I'm just trying to say that in terms of infrastructure, we're able on record time to meet our obligation, except building a stadium here after taking a cruise over a helicopter over Cape Town, and we build a stadium that we never planned by subplant right there. There will be tennis on Friday in that stadium. But it's running at a loss for the city of Cape Town. Now, that's why when I was in sports, we were discussing how to demolish it, you know, because it's only Cape Town Ajax and Cape Town City, and they get chowed all the time, and it's only full when there is Pirates and Kaizer Chiefs. Now, and rugby sometime, and so on. But those are some of the decisions. But we build our stadiums on time, and that is all what I was saying. And I'm not saying that we must take reckless decisions. I'm not saying that to them. They are supposed to be my advisors. Minister, you said in your agreement we must achieve this. They must be loyal and be, I mean, not loyal. They must be saying, this thing is not achievable unless this happens. It does not mean what I say goes. I must be able to explain to the public and to you that in PRASA we are unable to achieve the following because I've got these difficulties. Now, if a board, you come as a minister, lies to you, and then thereafter you discover things, they just pop up, people will do malicious compliance, and some will come to the minister and write and say this and that. You give people a benefit of doubt. You don't want to get into a place and then you are Mr. Razzmatazz, you know, and then you dismiss people left and right. You have not even established what is the problem. Now, it won't work like that. So I'm thankful for that, Chair. And then intergovernmental, which is my last point, that's why I'm in Cape Town. And even after now, I'm meeting with the MEC. We've had a fruitful meeting. We're meeting next week, Tuesday. We are going to meet with the stakeholders. We unlock N2 Express. We address the central line, which is not going to happen because it's been demolished. PRASA has got the task to deal with that. We go into the meeting so that they can answer to the city. And I said yesterday in the meeting with the city, myself, the mayor, the MEC, the MMC, all of us were there with our officials. I said, let's look at each other in the face. Who are we? Government. Let's take a government decision. Don't say Mbalula is a national minister. Let's say a government. What is in the best interest of our people in Cape Town? And that is what we're going to achieve with the Cape, with the Western Cape government, with ourselves working together. And then next week, we will face the nation and say, this is what we're going to do. We'll talk to Codeta, we'll talk to everybody in terms of unlocking this, and then ensure that we bring some permanent solution to the central line, and our agency must deal with that. Other issues that are debatable, devolution, other suggestions about concessions that is an option we can bring in. I said to the colleagues in government, if in Cape Town you've got these views, bring them on the table and let's discuss. Let's not talk past each other. Yes, in our political parties we can shout at each other and fight, but when we manage resources of people, and people here in Cape Town, Michelle's Plain, Khayelitsha, can't reach work. Some of them, I was in the streets, they say, Minister of Transport, whenever I go to Khayelitsha, you know what? The only thing I can afford to reach town is a train, to at least go and find a peace job for myself. Today, I'm locked in the township. I can't even reach town. Thank you very much for this time, and I'm quite grateful for this moment, and we'll work very hard to ensure things happen, but we're very much committed to what we say. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, Minister, I think as you were speaking, a matter has been brought to my attention around papers being filed about the appointment of the administrator. We will request that you keep us abreast with those developments. We ourselves will also look into the prescripts of the law so that we safeguard the integrity of Parliament's processes insofar as directions are concerned. So I think that is a matter that will require urgent attention. I may not have the full details now, but it has been brought to mind. I'm sure you will be in a better position to understand once it comes to you. But for now, as I said, Administrator, our support has got terms and conditions. And,
I'm not aware of any papers filed, but if they are filed, you will know in public, but will also keep you abreast.
No,
as I'm seated here, I don't know about that, but I'm ready.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, I think we can leave it at that, and then we will develop the roadmap moving forward and make decisions. Next week is SONA, and the programming whip and the whips have only given one day for meetings next week, and because they want the precinct on lockdown, so we will receive guidance from that. If the meeting goes ahead, colleagues, we will meet next week for the purposes of in-house matters in their entirety. And then post-SONA, our first point of call will be SAA. And bring all those matters to a logical conclusion on that side as well. So that being the case, in the absence of no further business, thank you very much, and we wish you well. The meeting stands adjourned.